The way we'll run this will be a quick presentation by the, well, by me, co-chair, on what our budget's basically about, set the stage. It'll be pretty quick because we don't want to waste your time with my time. We want to hear from you. We'll probably pull about four people up at a time. We're going to use the list, go through the list in order, and we'll call four people up, and then I'll also mention four people to get ready to come up. And if you get confused, just raise your hand, and that's fine. We'll get it all figured out. And that way we keep things moving pretty quickly, make sure everyone, again, gets a chance to talk. I'd like to tell you that what you have before you here is your full Ways and Means Committee. This is the budget committee for the state of Oregon. You're also blessed by having the Senate President, the Majority Leader of the Senate down there, and the House Majority Leader down there to take the time to come here. And I put two targets here so you know who the two main culprits are if you have a beef, and hopefully there may be a few of you actually think we did an okay job. So we'll get right at it. Those of you that have a handout, you can look. We're going to run through this slideshow real quick. Many of you know what's in the budget and what, more importantly, maybe is not in the budget and the reason you're here tonight. Our basic budget's designed to make what we like to think are some strategic investments in our state. We can't make all the investments we like, but we're trying to make some that are, we think, very, very important. And it's also about building a sustainable budget. The fine print's about the process we use. We tried to do a lot of early prevention, emphasize children first, tried to have a more transparent budget process, hence our appearance here tonight. Get some feedback from you as we're halfway through the legislative session, trying to test out ideas. The rest of the members on this dais, besides Representative Nolan, my co-chair, and myself, are going to be listening to your comments to see where they need to add, subtract, multiply, or divide to our recommendations to get at your needs. Skip to the next slide. This is calling out the major investments we're trying to articulate. There'll be some slides later on that go through them in greater detail. What we think the highlights of the budget are our K-12 funding figure of $6,245,000,000. That includes a school improvement fund, a new shared responsibility scholarship model that guarantees every single Oregonian affordable access to higher education. We put $100 million aside in the budget from a variety of funding sources for affordable housing. We heard on the campaign trail again and again that that was important. Of course, we put 100 officers back on the street, and we actually try and take care of our county partners. As you've heard, they're facing some problems with the federal government maintaining the secure rural schools payments, and whether or not that comes through, we're going to try and partner with them to make sure we recognize that your state isn't run just by the state offices alone, but by your county partners. One county partner in particular I got to pay very close attention to. We also are setting aside a significant rainy day fund, probably the largest rainy day fund at the end of the biennium you're going to see, we've seen in the last decade. Running through the slides here, this slide is just to represent that our goal was to make sure we had a sustainable budget. We don't have the revenues that the governor had hoped to have when he made his budget. And that's the biggest reason why our budget looks rather parsimonious, if you will, compared to his. We're lacking anywhere from $400 to $600 million that he had assumed in his budget for the various programs that we don't have access to. We don't have access to that money. So the co-chairs have tried to build a sustainable budget that lasts more than just one biennium. In the next slide, there's been a lot of talk about, well, geez, how, Senator Schrader, how come you can't make do with the general fund budget went up 20%. That's like, my goodness, you could fund everything with that. Well, this slide shows you that if you follow that little straight blue line across, we're only now, this biennium, getting back up to the level of funding per capita basis that we had 6 years ago. So while it seems like a lot of money, we cut a lot of stuff out of your state government. Some of it maybe could have gone. So other parts of it, like stable funding for K-12, kicking people out of nursing homes and cutting state police, I don't think is good policy, and we got to add stuff back. The next slide is just a general bar graph. I'll explain it to you. You can read it later at your leisure. It basically hits the key program areas that our subcommittees focus on when they make budget decisions. We can't have all of us at every committee meeting. Nothing would get done. So we're divided up into six different committees with a few of our other colleagues to deal with education, human services, natural resources, public safety, et cetera. And what we've got on the first bar there is what we did 2 years ago. The middle blue bar is actually what we call our current service level. That's that first bar adjusted for inflation and caseload. And the dark purple bar is what the co-chairs are recommending for funding levels in those program areas. You'll see in every single case, except for other, we've increased that allocation. I'm speaking fast because I want to get through this. I apologize. This is a slide that shows that while we're put a lot of money into K-12 as a percentage of the increased budget, K-12 is not the big gun here. It's not the big gorilla. We're actually putting a fair amount of money into human services. A lot of money, over 50% increase, goes forward in economic development, and we're not forgetting our natural resources either. So while those are smaller budgetary allocation areas, they are also actually pretty well taken care of, we feel, in the co-chair's budget. The next slide is prime time exciting news that I'm sure Jay Leno is going to want to get on his TV screen. This is a Ways and Means slide that shows the actual program allocations by program area. The bottom right-hand busy work, the six columns there listed education, human services, public safety, transportation, natural resources, general government. That's the actual allocations that these subcommittee members have to work with. The co-chairs set the parameters. We say, education, Representative Galizio, you're the subcommittee chair for that committee. You've got $8.125 billion to work with. Figure out how much goes to community colleges, higher ed, K-12, OHSU, scholarships. The co-chairs make a recommendation. You work it with public input and find out where you're going to be at. Next slide is calling out those initiatives I alluded to earlier. As I said, we're funding K-12 at a record-setting pace here. We're still short of the quality education model. That's unattainable in this current biennium with the revenues we have. We're making an 18% increased investment in K-12. This is the best budget they've had since Measure 5 occurred over a decade ago. And we also call out the School Improvement Fund. It's not all going through the normal state school fund. About $260 million is called out for special programs that will be grant-based and different school districts will apply for to improve their basic achievement scores, the achievement gap, making sure we take care of the third-grade reading scores, and also improve graduation rates. The shared responsibility model is an initiative by both the House, the Senate, and the Governor's Office to make sure that there's not some artificial cutoff where students can't get a quality education in this state. As a result of this model that actually goes up to the middle class or lower middle class students at a reduced grant rate, we can make sure that every single student in this state can get a quality education, having working a minimum wage job during the summer and maybe 10 or 15 hours during the week, during the school year. They'll graduate with hopefully a maximum debt load if they're going to one of the four-year institutions of about $13,000 if they have to take some loans out. And community colleges should have no debt at the end of their tenure there. So this is a huge initiative. We're only the second state in the nation to take this on, and hopefully it speaks well about our commitment to the next century and what we're trying to accomplish with our youngsters. The next is a housing initiative. When Representative Nolan and I were campaigning around the district, it became very apparent that housing was a critical component to the success of any of our programs, whether it was mental health, drug addiction, seniors, aging, hunger. I mean, you can name the program. This came up repeatedly. And so we thought this was something important to call out. Our colleagues, I think, have agreed with that. And we're trying to, for the first time since I've been in the legislature, we've talked about increasing our paltry $15 million housing trust fund account. We're going to make, if we can today, a $100 million investment. As I said, we are trying to target prevention. We don't hit all prevention. We're going to hear that tonight, I think, from some of you. But our goals are to improve our highway safety and interdict that meth problem. We've done a good job of shutting down the labs in the state. We need to fund the state police and our police agencies to make sure they can interdict the drug that's coming in from across the borders. We're also trying to improve our access to health care for kids. There's this Healthy Kids initiative you've probably heard about. We can't probably fund basic level health care for everybody yet. Senator Westland, Senator Bates are working very hard on that. So what we're trying to do is call out kids first. We're also making a clear commitment to child employment-related daycare for single moms trying to get back in the workforce. There's been a new mandate from the federal government. We're trying to match that commitment, expand eligibility, reduce co-pays, get people the services they need. As I alluded to, the counties, we're trying to call out a partnership there. We're going to replace the timber money that's lost that would otherwise go into the state school fund. We're also going to establish a $50 million matching program for counties so that they can access transportation money. The Rural Secure Schools money went primarily to the schools, roads, and then some of the general fund for these counties. We want to make sure they have an opportunity to survive these tough fiscal times while our federal delegation gets them some immediate relief over the next 4 or 5 years. One of the things we're most proud of, though, as I alluded to, is our ending balance. That may seem odd. We're trying to fund programs, but we realized that there was the most horrible recession just 6 years ago, depression-level recession. The good news is this body you see before you has learned from that. We are not going to spend every dime we have, and that's going to be tough. There's lots of needs out there. We're going to hear about it. But we think it's extremely important to set money aside. We have not spent the March forecast. There's another forecast coming that we're concerned will not be much better than the March forecast. So our ending balance is about $173 million. We already have an education stability fund. Now we're creating a rainy day fund. We're going to have almost $900 million set aside. So when that recession comes, we're prepared. We were totally unprepared 6 years ago. The next slide just summarizes our budget allocations. This says general fund lottery. This is our discretionary money, $14.9 billion. Basically, this is money that you send us through your taxes and the lottery. We also have federal money and other funds, fees, but those are dedicated. We can't really move that money around to fund the services I think that most Oregonians care about. And it calls out the different percentages there. You can read that in your packet. The next slide is we skipped through the total funds. Now this is the debt service. We put this up here. We'll spend a lot of time, but there's some discussion about, well, geez, you know, we'll just bond for stuff, Senator Schrader. You know, that's not really real money, and we can bond for it. We don't have to pay right now. Well, we learned our lesson in the recession. We were bonding for operational items, and that's not good public policy. And the point here is that for every dollar we set aside to do capital construction, funding debt service means a dollar less to hire professors, teachers, state troopers, caseworkers. This is the third best budget in Oregon history. You see how tiny that little bar is in the far right-hand side? That is still the third best capital construction budget for our university community college system in Oregon history. And the point is, we spent a lot of money in the recession in 2001 and then again in 2005 when we were trying to get out of the recession. Now it's time to get back to a sustainable level. And the next slide shows that even with that modest capital construction budget, our debt service continues to increase at a fairly exponential rate, totaling $65 million in the next 2 years. So that's our story. We're sticking to it, at least for the moment. And here's some more information if you want to get more information from the Legislative Fiscal website. Butcher, do you have anything to...
Let's listen to what people have to say.
Excellent idea. Okay, we're going to start with page number one. We're going to call, and I apologize if we macerate some of the names. Please feel free to correct us. We're going to call up Norm Ader, David Marks, Bob Nelson, and John Valley. And then on deck will be Dr. John Evans, Chris Walton, Debbie Noble, and Debbie Pope, but not yet. Please come forward. Please start. And you will be timed. I apologize for that.
Excellent. Good evening. My name is Norman Ader. I'm Executive Director of the Manufacturing 21 Coalition, and I'm here tonight with David Marks, who's Chair of the Coalition to support Oregon Inc. Recommendations. Many of you know Oregon Inc. made manufacturing, which provides 12% of all Oregon jobs and 20% of all living wage jobs, part of its innovation roadmap. It recommended to the governor, and the governor recommended to the legislature $2.375 million to Portland State University. This will produce three new faculty members in three technical areas, particularly important to manufacturing, acquire new industrial scale equipment and locate that at Portland State, which will allow not just Portland State but the university system more broadly to participate in industry scale research. The outcome of these investments will be new talent and equipment to grow the university system's capacity to participate in the kind of applied innovation that our manufacturing companies need to produce the kind of high-wage jobs that we need. The second element of Oregon Inc.'s recommendation was $1 million to double the size of OMI. This is a program that you know well, which has been around since the late 1980s. It's been highly successful. The change here is that some of those funds will be set aside for small businesses to participate in OMI. And then finally, $2 million from the Cluster Development Fund. These were funds that were put in the Cluster Development Fund in Oregon Economic Development. Were not part of the central piece of the Innovation Council, but yet shifted over there as part of its recommendation. This is $2 million for manufacturing to develop a healthy and strong and productive workforce.
Thank you. Good job.
Perfect.
My name is David Marks. I own Marks Metal Technology, a 60-year-old company here in Clackamas County, and I welcome you to the county. Tonight, I sit before you as chair of Manufacturing 21, representing many family businesses such as mine that has demonstrated ability to innovate, be creative, have the tenacity to work through building products here in the county and across the state. The monies Norm has put before you have benefited my little company in the form of working with Portland State University to evaluate and provide credibility into the processes that we do. Portland State is continuing to work with other manufacturers here in the county and the region to help clean up green their manufacturing processes. Supporting the Oregon Inc. and supporting what manufacturing is trying to leverage with some state dollars is a good thing, a good investment in Oregon. I would like also to touch base on the second focus, separate from innovation, research and development, and that is the pipeline needs, the workforce needs that manufacturers have come together in this coalition and working very hard with our public partners who have been wonderful to work with to make the investments in meaningful ways in K-12 to start rebuilding the pipeline of our future workforce. I know you've heard it in many different ways, but it is a true problem, a true issue, and we're working. I just came from Benson. Benson in Portland has been a hallmark in Oregon, and it's very much in jeopardy. So your efforts, our efforts in industry, we can make some good things happen in Oregon. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, David.
Hi, my name is Bob Nelson, and this is my 17th year of teaching at Clackamas Community College. These are my personal opinions, not that of the college, so I'm just here as an individual. I wanted to give you some good news and some success stories. First of all, my oldest daughter last summer graduated from Clackamas Community College and is working full-time, putting tax dollars back into the state. With her degree from Clackamas, she's now making almost as much as I am with a master's degree and 17 years of experience. But be that as it may, my youngest daughter is now at University of Oregon, and she graduated high school with a program between, a cooperative program between Clackamas and the high school where she gets advanced college credit. She came out of high school with 45 credits, which is a full year of college, which means that she's going to save our family about $15,000 doing so, which is a year of college there at Oregon. So these programs that are out there are making a big, big difference. And the final good thing I want to talk about is I just returned last Sunday with a team of students from Clackamas that attended a national landscape competition. And we competed with 700 different students from 54 different colleges and universities across the nation. And I just wanted to let you know that we had three students that were in the top five in some of these events that they participated in. Five in the top 10 and 10 in the top 20. We were only in 30 contests.
Lucky for the others.
Yeah. Interestingly, What I found out when I was talking with students, three of the students, whoops, I'm sorry.
That's all right. Thank you. Good story.
Hello. My name is John Valley. I'm the Oregon Government Affairs Director for the American Heart Association, and I thank both co-chairs and the rest of the committee for the opportunity to testify before you today. Since we have a limited amount of time, there is written testimony that I presented to members of the committee, but I'll just try to summarize it very quickly. Last session, there was a coalition of over 40 organizations that came together to support PE reform here in Oregon. The reason we did this was because obesity is fast becoming one of the biggest public health problems facing the state. With the leadership of Senate President Peter Courtney, we were able to get bipartisan support in the Senate for a strong vote to pass the requirements of basically having daily PE back in our schools, minimum minutes of physical education instruction for both middle schools and elementary schools based on national recommendations. We didn't quite get past the hurdle or that last finish line in the House, but we brought this legislation back this session. One of the things that we're very proud of, Senator Devlin last session put a provision in to get a physical activity and nutrition report here in Oregon to figure out what is the best way to deal with the obesity problem. Yesterday, the House voted on one of those recommendations, which was setting nutrition standards here in all of our schools for the state of Oregon, which is a great step forward. But the other equation when we're talking about obesity is not just poor nutrition, but it's lack of physical activity. Physical education is a proven, it's consistent with the recommendations in this report, CDC recommendations, the Surgeon General recommendations of restoring daily PE in our schools to help address the obesity problem. We're very proud that the Senate Education Committee earlier this session with Senator Morse unanimously passed these bills out of committee with bipartisan support. The key now with all legislation is making sure it's funded. Your committee has the ability to restore PE back in our schools, to invest in prevention. It's one of the hallmarks I heard in the overall co-chairs, but talking about quality education, investing in prevention. This is a proven prevention public health policy. We encourage the full committee to take it under consideration and support Senate Bill 367, Senate Bill 370, and 372. Thank you so much.
All right, so now we'll get Dr. Evans, Mr. Walton, Ms. Noble, and Ms. Pope up, and then we'll have on deck Diane Downs, Wendy Nelson, Dana Helms, and Kathy Poulton, please. Start right out.
Senator Schrader, Representative Nolan, and other members of the Senate Budget Ways and Means Committee, thanks for coming out to the people of Oregon. It makes a lot of people, it makes it more accessible for the people of Oregon to talk to you all. My name is Debbie Poppy, and I'm a parent of two daughters. My youngest is now an eighth grader at Ogden Middle School, and my older daughter, Hannah, is now a freshman at OSU. Hannah has gone through her entire public school career since the implementation of Measure 5 in 1991. And she has suffered those cutbacks through her entire school career, I must say. I, myself, have a long history of volunteering in the Oregon City public schools, as well as advocating for them. I began, along with several other dedicated moms, many years ago to get involved with several grassroots organizations, among them the Coalition for School Funding Now, Our Oregon, and currently Stand for Children. We have set out to educate and advocate for adequate school funding with both members of the public, the business community, and the senators, representatives, and governors who represent us in Salem. To that end, Oregon City did finally pass a bond measure for the new Oregon City High School in 2000, after 33 years of no passed measures. Yay. We also attended rallies in Portland and Salem and met with our representatives and senators to push for long-term school funding resolution. Unfortunately, we have been sidetracked way too many times by the short-term fixes just to get through the next biennium, just to get through the school year at hand. I do applaud this legislature for helping schools, especially recently passing the rainy day measure that you did. However, there's still a lot of work to do in the areas of tax reform, as I'm sure you know, and also to adequately fund our schools in the interim. Eventually, I would really like to see the schools funded at the current QEM level, which is $7.786 billion, as Senator Schrader mentioned. My concern is that many people have left the public school system.
I have to cut you off, Debbie. I apologize for that.
Okay. So, I do have it in writing also.
Okay.
So.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Schrader and Nolan and esteemed members of the committee, my name is Debbie Noble. I'm a concerned parent, member of Stand for Children, member of the Oregon City School Board, and a chief financial officer of Noble Lumber. I want to thank you for tentatively allocating $6.24 billion to K-12 education. And I would also like to encourage you to work to increase that to at least $6.3 billion. Providing more money for Oregon's education is good for Oregon's future and the best investment you can make. I realize that money is tight, but it will become tighter if we do not make the necessary investments now. In February 2007, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce released its much-anticipated state-by-state report on educational effectiveness. Oregon public schools received an F in the category that addressed workforce readiness of its students. In contrast, Washington and Idaho received C's in this category, and California received a B. If you were a business owner worried about the quality of employees readily available to your business, where would you be located? Oregon received C's in both academic achievement categories. Washington received A's. Oregon received a B in return on investment. Washington got an A here also. In rigor of standards, Oregon received a D, Washington a C. In short, Washington beat out Oregon in all categories. Where would you move with your family? Even if you opted to work in Oregon, you could live in Washington, and many do. It is noteworthy that Oregon received a B in return on investment. You are getting a big bang for your buck when you allocate money to K-12 education. Our teachers, administrators, and students do a great job with what you give us. Businesses will come here, families will come here, and as a consequence, property tax and income tax revenues will increase, and you will be able to fund the other programs. Many other budget items do not have the ability to directly impact the state's revenues like quality education does.
Thank you very much. Good job.
Thank you.
Hi, my name's Chris Walton. I'm a parent, Stand for Children member. I'm also a director of distribution at Hampton Lumber, the second biggest private lumber private company in Oregon. And I'm here to discuss why various industries need you to invest and keep the budget for K-12 at $6.3 billion. Like it's been reiterated and said many times here, for a strong economy, for a strong future, and for a good workforce, we're going to need you guys to invest in K-12 education. The workforce we're getting currently is not satisfactory. The people we're getting in the classroom sizes need to be addressed. For example, my daughter, who goes to school in Beaverton, her kindergarten class has 26 kids in it. It's unacceptable. It gets worse when you go down to Willamina. If any of those know where Willamina's at, it's in the coastal community. It's a timber town. It has 33 kids to one teacher in the classroom. It needs to start being addressed. And for us to have a strong economy and a strong future, we're going to need you guys to step up to the plate and put the money back into education. Over the past 5 years, Oregon's lost $1.2 billion in education dollars. This loss of investment is directly infected on early education. 60% of the kindergarten classrooms in the United States are full day. We're falling behind. We've got to start moving forward. We need you guys to start investing in early education. Can't emphasize it enough for the future and for our workforce that we need you to step up and put the budget at $6.3 billion for K-12 education. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Probably shouldn't do a lot of, I don't want to stifle his enthusiasm, but we probably should do a lot of clapping, so we could just go right to the next person, if that's okay. Thank you, though.
Good evening, Senator Schrader and Representative Nolan and committee members. My name is John Evans, and I represent the Oregon Medical Association and part of the coalition with the American Heart Association, encouraging you to invest in the PE bill for our children. We've heard a lot about good things for the economy and the monies for the health payments or to try to keep the Oregon children healthy by getting medical care for them, we need to invest at the root cause, and that's part of what Senator Devlin brought forth in his study this year, which I haven't seen yet because it came out yesterday or today. But it's clear that the disease of obesity is an epidemic when you have 60 to 70% of our population. I looked at our OR schedule in one select day last month, and over 75% of our patients had either overweight or obesity issues. It is an epidemic. We do need to address it. And it starts and it's blossoming in our children, which is the tragedy. You all are aware and you've been educated about the issues of diabetes coming on over time with obese conditions. That over 20 years, and I'll see them 20 years later when they've had it, the diabetic condition for a while, and you start getting end-stage end organ problems with kidney failure and the whole gamut of problems with that, the pain and suffering that people have to go through with these kinds of conditions. The high blood pressure exists and it proportionally goes up and can come down as people lose weight. Sleep apnea, again, is another major issue, and we're seeing that in very young kids. And it's not just repairing the excess tissue and removing it, or the tonsils or the pharynx, soft tissue that needs to be removed. The pain and suffering of just having needle sticks to get an IV when it's hard to find. In any event, all of these issues are there. They're real. They're something that can be attacked by dealing with PE.
We need you to finish up. I'm sorry.
Now, it's a strategic investment in our children before they're sick. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good testimony. All right, let's get Diane Downs up, Ms. Nelson, Ms. Helms, and Ms. Poulton. We have John Pepino on deck, Patty Jarrett on deck, Jack Shore on deck, and John Aguirre on deck.
Co-Chair Schrader and Nolan and members of the committee. My name is Diane Downs, and I'm a resident of the Canby School District. I'm a parent of two Canby High School graduates and a member of Stanford Children. Mm-hmm. Thank you for holding this field hearing tonight. I'm speaking tonight in support of a $6.3 billion allocation for K-12 education for the 2007-2009 biennium. In Canby, we've cut $5.6 million in programs and services over the past 5 years due to the statewide budget crisis that has left schools and all government-funded agencies in triage. Canby schools have done what they can to continue to provide students a quality education. Prior to making any cuts in the classroom, the district eliminated training for staff, reduced its maintenance fund, cut district services personnel to a skeleton staff, and quit watering fields. We finally had no other options than to make program cuts. Our students have lost electives, sit in classrooms of 35 students or more, and do without specialists such as librarians, music teachers, and physical education teachers. I applaud the co-chairs for proposing additional funds for education beyond the governor's budget. $6.24 billion is a great start, but I encourage you to make the additional investment to reach $6.3 billion for K-12 education. At this level, Canby and other districts can start to rebuild lost programs. $6.3 billion means about $2 million more than the governor's budget to Canby for the 2007-2009 biennium. These funds will be used to reduce student-teacher ratios to 24.5 to 1, offer music and physical education 30 minutes twice a week, update some of our computer labs, add back maintenance personnel, add one librarian and two reading specialists. Much of this data has come from Deborah Summer, whose testimony I attached.
Great. Thank you, Diane.
My name is Wendy Nelson. I'm a fourth grade teacher here in Oregon City, and I've had the pleasure of teaching in public schools for the past 30 years. I'm here to support the budget for K-12 education at the quality education model. And I'm here to tell success stories as related to class size. I currently have 29 students in my fourth grade classroom. I started the year with 24. 21% of the students in my classroom, and I am a general education teacher, 21% of my students are on IEPs for learning or physical disabilities, speech or language concerns, or other challenges. One additional student, that makes 30, joins my classroom for 2 half-hour sessions during the day as a mainstream student. 2 of my students are on daily behavioral plans. Here's the success stories. In my reading group of 14 general education students, 100% of my students have passed the state reading test. 64% of those students exceeded. Our school-wide focus is on writing this year. At the beginning of the year, my students were struggling to write complete sentences. We're now writing 5-paragraph essays. My students can sing all 50 states in alphabetical order. Some of them can recite those states in less than 20 seconds. That's a success. Out of my pocket, I purchased books for my students and given away over 50 books to my students as incentive for at-home reading. On the state math test scores, the 12 students who were able to take the test before TESA crashed, 92% passed or exceeded. The one who didn't pass missed it by 1 point out of 215 points. That's success. This is done on a 10-hour workday, and this is not the exception in my building. A 10-hour workday is more like the rule. Can you imagine what I can do if I had a reasonable class size? If Oregonians say they support public K-12 education, let's put our money where our mouth is. That would be a success.
Thank you very much.
My name is Dina Helms, and I reside in Happy Valley. My 3 children attend Happy Valley Elementary in the North Clackamas School District. I'm also a teacher in the Reynolds School District and a Stand for Children member. Thank you for coming to our community to hold this hearing. Over the last decade, North Clackamas School District has been forced to cut tens of millions of dollars from its budget. We've cut 8 administrators, making it one of the leanest districts in the state per administrator. We've cut more than 30 teachers and 20 support staff. We've eliminated our media specialists. We've lost programs, reduced outdoor school, tag funding, and days of elementary music in PE. We've cut school days. Our classes are overcrowded, especially in the middle schools, in the high schools, and the high-growth neighborhoods of North Clackamas. We've nearly depleted our financial reserves in the district. I am proud of the work our district has done with its bare-bones budget, and now I'm here to ask you tonight to help us do better. I want to thank the co-chairs for stepping up and proposing $6.24 billion for education. This will enable us to begin to restore our programs, but I also want to encourage you to continue to work towards the $6.3 billion budget for K-12. The difference between $6.24 and $6.3 billion would be, for our district, very significant. It will help change the lives of our children. The difference would enable us to add an additional day of music and PE in the school day. The additional money could also ensure that each school in the district has a counselor. I do not envy the difficult decisions that you have to make, and know that balancing the budget is a daunting task. Stand for Children fully supports raising the cigarette tax and the corporate minimum tax to increase revenue for a range of critical needs. Thank you again for the work you do to make our state great. I give of my time for my children as a mother and a teacher, and appreciate that you do the same as our legislators. Together, we have a chance to strengthen our schools so that we can educate the future leaders of Oregon to the best of our ability. You have the opportunity to step up and help them become the beneficiaries of a top-tier education. Thank you.
Very good.
My name's Kathy Poulton. I live in Clackamas County. Thank you for taking the time to hold this hearing. I'm a teacher in Reynolds School District. I've been there 29 years. And I'm a member of Stand for Children. I'm here tonight to applaud your dedication to funding K-12 education and respectfully request that you continue to work toward reaching a K-12 allocation of at least $6.3 billion. At $6.3 billion, Reynolds will still need to make cuts. At $6.24 billion, we will see a reduction of over $4 million in our budget. In the Reynolds School District, we support a diverse student body. We were fortunate enough to receive additional funding over the past few years from Multnomah County Income Tax, which enabled us to prevent cutting 55 teaching positions in 8 school days. However, as ITAX dollars ceased to flow into our district last year, we scrambled to fill gaps and cut costs wherever possible. Ultimately, the district cut 12 teachers and 25 classified staff. We now, as all other districts do, depend on the state to ensure that our children continue to receive a quality education. I worry most about our children living below the poverty level. Reynolds is home to four of the state's eight most impoverished elementary schools. Four schools have 90% of their students receiving free and reduced lunch. My school serves 100% free and reduced breakfast and lunch. In the last few years, as we have seen increases in class sizes and cuts to support staff, I have seen a dramatic impact on most of my students' ability to learn. It is vital that we provide these students the resources they need to succeed and break out of the poverty cycle they were born into. Public education was created in this country to be a great equalizer. In Reynolds, we struggle to accomplish this goal. Am I all out of time?
Be close. Thank you. Did a good job.
Thank you.
All right, let's get Mr. Rapino up, Ms. Jarrett, Ms. Shore, and Mr. Gary. Then we'll have Ed Montecucco on deck, Laura Masterson on deck, Mysterious 4-H Youth on deck, and Joanne Truesdale on deck.
Co-Chair Senator Schrader and Co-Chair Representative Nolan and other members of the committee, I am John Papineau, a resident of Milwaukee and the manager of my family's forest land that we've owned since 1943. I'm testifying tonight on behalf of the OSU Extension Service. Several other supporters of the service are here with me. They're wearing these orange stickers. We're here to ask for your support for the integrated research programs of Oregon State University delivered by the three statewide public service organizations, which are the OSU Agricultural Research Service, the OSU Forest Research Laboratory, and OSU Extension Service. These three organizations have proposed a series of policy option package initiatives that will improve the lives and businesses of Oregonians across the state. I find these programs very compelling. Let me tell you about one of them. The Forest Research Lab has a program area dealing with forest regeneration. Last Saturday, I used a product of that research. My son, grandson, and I planted Douglas fir seedlings in a small clearing on our family forest. The trees that we planted did not look anything at all like the trees I planted for the U.S. Forest Service 50 years ago. They were the same age, 2 years old, the same species, Douglas fir, but these were monsters. 50 years ago, two old Douglas fir seedlings were about a foot tall with stems about as big as a matchstick. Many of these trees this year were over 2 feet tall, and the stems were the size of my little finger. I probably won't live to see these harvested, but my grandson will, and he'll probably have to do it before he retires because they're going to be too big for the local mill. I urge you to support the OSU statewide $15 million policy option package that was approved by the OSU system. Thank you
very much. Good job.
I'm Patty Jarrett, and thank you for coming to the community tonight. I'm the volunteer coordinator at Extension of the Family Food Education Program. This was a program that was funded last year, and 15 volunteers were trained in the methods, science, and techniques of safe food preservation. And part of the responsibility of the people was to provide 30 hours of payback, and much of this was done at our local farmers market. So over 1,000 community members were advised on frequently critical safety issues regarding food preservation, particularly pressure gauge canning. We also were the only organization in the county that did pressure dial gauge testing. We tested 141 pressure gauges, and 20 of those 20% failed, which means that there was potential very serious food safety issues if someone had tried to use those pressure gauges. And I just want to tell you, I'm an ardent supporter of Extension, that they are the come-to place in this community for all kinds of questions. Questions from how do you plant a tree, to my freezer has it defrosted, what do I do with the food. I was in the office this week. People came in with a small plastic bags of insects. People don't know where to go to answers to problems. These people had them in their bathroom, in their bedrooms. The master gardener was there. They were able to identify the insect and also to tell them how to deal with the problem. Vital services in the community, services that are available to people who don't know where else to go to get answers. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Jack Shore, and I'm here speaking on behalf of OSU Extension. I'm a master gardener. I'm also a master watershed steward. I just want to say, I happened to be down in Salem today on a field trip with my son in his classroom, and I just happened to see you in action. So I really want to say I'm impressed to have you see you here in person after watching you work on those child protection bills today. So. Anyhow, what I wanted to say is my piece is about Master Watershed, and what I like about that is I was trained by OSU Faculty Extension, and what I like about that is a very low-cost training. I got a lot of, basically, I'm just a retired teacher, so I didn't know what else to expect, but I got a lot of good training. Then I went out, and in my payback of 80 hours, I was able to do a lot of community work and coordinate a lot of things with Eagle Scouts, with local businesses, with the Neighborhood Association, with Clean Water Services, who's been a great supporter of us, and solve. And so I just want to say that I think OSU, in the capacity that it has helped me in both Master Gardening and Master Watershed Steward, really helps me pay back, and it seems to me it's quite a large bang for a small buck. And I want to thank you for investing in myself. Thank you.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Schrader and Co-Chair Nolan and members of the committee, I'm John Aguirre, Executive Director for the Oregon Association of Nurseries. I want to discuss the need for full funding for the Oregon University System's statewide public services agencies, which is housed at Oregon State University. The statewide public service agencies include the Oregon Agricultural Experiment Station, the OSU Extension Service, and OSU Forest Research Laboratory. I'm most familiar with OSU's North Willamette Research and Extension Center, and I just want to highlight a couple of examples of how well that center operates to the benefit of the industry, the environment, and the Oregon public. One, solving tree disorders for Oregon nurseries. North Willamette staff have operated a very successful program of applied research and extension to reduce various tree disorders that threaten grower profitability. That program addresses half of all the trees, bare root trees, that are planted in this state. And OAN members estimate the program has generated $2 million in production cost savings annually since its inception. Another program addresses weed management problems, where, again, the North Willamette Research and Extension Center is delivering new practices and recommendations to better control weed management problems. The dissemination effort has been very successful. Over 50% of growers have received that material, and the rate of adoption of these recommendations and practices has been very high at almost 80%, again, reducing herbicide use and providing for greater profitability. A third program, the rose midge problem, resulted in heavy insecticide spray applications for rose growers. North Willamette helped the rose growers reduce their spray applications from 12 a year to one highly effective spray application. So I would say that I urge co-chairs in this committee to please return to the governor's budget and fully fund the programs at the governor's level. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, let's get Mr. Montecucco, Ms. Masterson, the Mysterious 4-H Youth, and Ms. Truesdale up. Next on deck will be Judy Irvin, Mike Bieri, Tom Wisser, or Lusser, was here, apologize for that, and Dr. Kenneth Chung. And first, I guess, Ed.
Okay. Yes, I'm Ed Montecucco from Montecucco Farms, and I'm here to testify for the need for additional funding for the Oregon University system statewide public service agencies, which include the Oregon Agricultural Experiment Station and the OSU Extension Service. The Oregon Agriculture Experiment Station and the OSU Extension Service work closely with the Oregon Fresh Market Growers Association and the Willamette Rhubarb Growers Association as the Oregon vegetable industry was developing. As Oregon vegetable industry has developed, the need for assistance has grown. I would like to relate how collaboration between our industry and the Agriculture Experiment Station and the OSU Extension Service has assisted the Oregon vegetable industry to maintain its economic competitiveness. I'll just give one example. The Willamette Rhubarb Growers Association has been growing rhubarb since 1970. During the first 5 years, the Extension Service and the Association collaborated to find a way to extend the season earlier by injecting a natural growth hormone and covering the rhubarb crowns with plastic mulch. The Extension Service worked on the rate and timing of the injecting this natural hormone, and the Willamette Rhubarb Association growers devised a method of injecting these rhubarb crowns. By working together, the season for rhubarb was extended by 1 month when rhubarb is in short supply throughout the U.S. This allowed the Willamette Rhubarb Growers Association to receive a good return for rhubarb at a time when the demand is high. And the cooperation between the Extension Service and the Willamette Rhubarb Growers Association has returned to the growers an extra $500,000 per year for the past 30 years. This is tax dollars that are coming back to the state from other states in the union.
Very good. I appreciate it. I got to cut you off.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
My name is Laura Masterson. I'm the owner of the 47th Avenue Farm, and I'm here to speak in support of the OSU Extension and give you a few more reasons to fully fund these or restore full funding to these programs. We're an urban farm with fields along the urban growth boundary in both Multnomah and Clackamas County. We grow 4 acres of mixed vegetable production year-round, and we direct market them through the CSA and to local restaurants. I'm also past president of the Portland Area CSA Coalition, and with that group of growers, fresh market vegetable growers, we meet several times a year. We're regularly joined at these meetings by various extension agents. Sometimes they're there to speak on a particular topic, and other times they're just there to listen and network. Their technical expertise is invaluable in these situations. And it's just as important are the relationships that develop there. Later in the season, when problems arise, we know where to turn. Oregon OSU Extension is not just a website or a technical publication. It's real people who help us solve real problems out in the field. If the answers to the problems are there, they're going to find them. Sometimes the answers just aren't there. And if that's the case, I know I can count on OSU Extension to design eloquent and directly relevant research to solve problems for Oregon small farmers. At every turn, this technical information and the underlying research has supported our farming operation. For example, the fertility calculator they developed and our work on the participatory potato project has helped us strategically manage fertility on our farm. We're farming next to sensitive wetland areas that we want to protect from runoff, and we're managing for narrow profit margins. So saving money on nitrogen can make or break our crops. Fertility-related savings that OSU Extension has helped us find on our farm have had big payoffs for us and a ripple effect through the community. But our stewardship of local wetlands has implication for all the downstream users, and more profitable farms
don't mind us.
Help us sustain and enhance vibrant local communities.
Hello, my name is Jana Soli. I'm 16 years old, and I've been active at Clackamas County 4-H since fourth grade. I'm in all kinds of projects, from art and sewing to horses and cooking, and now I'm also a 4-H County and State Ambassador, a 4-H summer camp counselor, a junior superintendent at Clackamas County Fair, and I hold other leadership positions at the county and state levels. 4-H is a huge part of my life, and through it I've learned invaluable skills, not only in my projects, but also life skills like leadership, communication, working with people, and community service. By participating in 4-H in different activities like summer conference and Know Your State Government, I've been able to meet kids from all over Oregon. Last fall, I had the opportunity to attend a 4-H leadership conference in Washington, D.C., and I got to meet 4-Hers from all over the country. I can't think of another program like 4-H that lets kids explore so many areas that interest them and that helps them grow and become really good at what they do. There's something for everyone, ranging from livestock projects to computers and technology. But 4-H is so much more than that. It's about learning to give back to your community and growing into responsible adults for the future. I wanted to be here tonight to let everyone know how important 4-H is to me and what a huge positive impact it's had on my life. It's definitely shaped the kind of person I've become. It's helped me gain confidence and self-esteem, and it's helped me grow as a leader in my community. I'm passionate about 4-H because it's impacted my life in so many positive ways, and I've had so many opportunities through 4-H to learn and grow. I would love for young people all over the state of Oregon to continue to have the opportunities I've had through 4-H over the last 8 years. Doesn't that seem like something worth keeping around? 4-H is a much-needed resource that the youth of Oregon can't afford to lose. That's why I strongly urge you to support 4-H and the entire extension program. Thank you.
Nicely done.
Well done.
Good evening. For the record, my name is Dr. Joanne Truesdell. I serve as interim president at Clackamas Community College. It's nostalgic for me to be here this evening for several reasons. One is that 28 years ago, I think I was eating in this cafeteria as a graduate from Oregon City High School. 27 years ago, I entered into Clackamas Community College as my local community college for which I would not have an education. 25 years ago, I graduated from Clackamas Community College, and today I have the pleasure of serving as their interim president. Last week, I spent some time with my parents. They are modest in their income, and it gave me great comfort that because of what people like you did 30 years ago for our community colleges, I could give my mom and dad comfort as they hit retirement. In 1979, right here in this cafeteria, I don't believe that I thought that the community college or other people would have thought that the community college would have made such an impact in one family's life. And what you do every day makes a difference in many families' lives over and over again and for generations. It is good that you already know that community colleges are powerful for the Oregon economy. You'll also hear from people after me about that as well. You also know that if we continue disinvestment in community colleges, we will end up in that lovely death spiral known to many other states and one which we do not wish to repeat for ours. We request respectfully $529 million to maintain community college services. The people that you have seen and heard tonight are partners with us, the OSU Extension agents, the K-12 system, and we cannot do the kinds of things we do with them without that funding. We serve 1,600 students annually in our district, high school students with accelerated college credit. That's roughly 10% of our total high school. We cannot do the reach. We don't have the funds. We know how to do it. We know how to get it done. Lastly, we also have in our business world and in our economy a vibrant healthcare community because we have vibrant aging people.
I have to summarize. I'm sorry.
That's fine. We're requesting our full capital construction to support those efforts. Thank you very much.
Very good. All right. Let's get Judy Irvin up here, Mr. Bieri, Mr. Lussier, and Dr. Chung. Next on deck will be Phil Fogg, Robert Strecker, Chris and David, and John Lee. Start right up.
Good evening. I'm Judy Irvin, Vice Chair of the Clackamas Community College Board of Education. I am very pleased to represent students and more than 300,000 residents of the Community College District. I have three brief scenarios which I want to share with you tonight. One is what would happen under the committee's recommendation of $458 million for the system. At Clackamas Community College, this would force the Board of Education to cut the only places we have left, its programs. It would force us to return to increasing tuition, which in effect passes our budget shortfalls onto those who can least afford it. The second scenario is the governor's recommended budget of $483 million. This would allow us to stay with the status quo. No growth, no additional faculty for our high-demand programs, no expansion of our workforce training programs. The third scenario is a unanimous request from the 17 community colleges for $529 million. Under this scenario, students at Clackamas Community College would have additional opportunity for family wage health care jobs, have additional training opportunities for other professional, technical, employable skills. It would allow them to have increased opportunities for baccalaureate achievement with a seamless Oregon University System transfer program. It would allow increased opportunities for academic success through additional advising and tracking programs. And most importantly, it would have no tuition increases for this biennium. I thank the members of this community for listening to us. We have adopted performance measures able to prove the important job that we are doing. However, if we continue to de-invest in this system, we will not be able to meet or improve these performance outcomes. And more importantly, Oregon's future citizens will not have access to affordable education, and that is a shame.
Good job. Mr. Gary.
Co-chairs, committee members, thank you for being here tonight. I am Mike Berry. I'm Director of Human Resources for Benchmade Knife Company here in Oregon City. I have worked for over 40 years in manufacturing and over 30 years in human resource management. For the past several years, we have been hearing that there will be a shortage of workers with the right skills to fill the jobs in the future, whenever that is. Let me tell you, it's right now. The future is here. It's today. I just came from our headquarters facility here in Oregon City, where we have a severe shortage of finishers, machine operators, and assemblers. Every knife that we can produce is sold. The demand is that high. We have a contract with the U.S. military for 180,000 of our safety hooks, and we can't produce them because we don't have enough workers. The primary source of talent for us is the community college system here in Oregon, and especially our partners at Clackamas Community College. They provide us with the emerging worker, and they train our current employees. They are the steam that keeps this employment train fired up and moving. Without this critical support, we quickly run out of people to do the job. The result is that, daily, we at Benchmade and other local Oregon manufacturers have to decide, do I make or buy? For us at Benchmade, it is China. For Freightliner, it was Mexico. It takes an incredible investment in time and money to ever recover these jobs, if ever. Please support our community college system. Don't force us to make any more foreign job decisions. It boils down to jobs.
Very good. That's a good way to end it, too. Thank you. Good job. Good point.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, and distinguished members of the committee. I'm Dr. Kenneth Chung. I'm a dentist here locally in the community. I'm here today representing Clackamas Community College as a business partner. I'm also the current president for the Clackamas County Dental Society, and I'm also a member of the Clackamas Healthcare Blue Ribbon Committee, owner and operator of a group of dental offices here in Clackamas County, Comfort Care Dental. I'm here to provide testimony and support for Oregon's community colleges. As a business person, educator, and dentist, I see firsthand daily the community college's invaluable contributions to both our residents in the community as well as the economy at large. There is not a day that goes by that as I quiz our high school graduates sitting in my dental chair that they don't tell me they're headed for the community college program. There is not one day that goes by that a high school student doesn't tell me that they're visualizing community colleges as their entry point. As a product of public education myself, I have learned that community colleges provide a critical, affordable education for students in our community. Community colleges are the quiet driving force that ensures the adequate frontline training of our workforce and prepares qualified candidates for entry into our state's institutions of higher education. There is no better starting point after K through 12, of course.
Smart man.
Well, I might live to leave the room in one piece. Okay.
Yeah, I see the targets here. We're pulling on you, man.
In short, the community colleges are essential to our society. They not only boost our economy, but also enhance our community's well-being. Our dental practice has had the privilege of having a long-standing partnership with Clackamas Community College here in our local community. Together, we've developed a new dental assisting program and have nurtured it. I think someone said to me earlier that it's in its incubation stages, awaiting for its actual hatching. We are currently operating in our Oregon City Dental Office for clinical space and awaiting the opening of the Harmony campus that will be coming to fruition, hopefully in the near future, by 2008. This partnership with CCC is an innovative and cost-effective approach to address the dental healthcare industry's needs for more dental assistants and eventually hygienists.
Thank you very much, Doctor. I appreciate it. Good testimony. All right, let's get Mr.
Oh, I'm right here.
I'm sorry.
I'm Tom. Actually, my name is Tim Lussier. Yeah. It's French.
About that?
Yeah, sure. I'm the president of our student government over here at Clackamas Community College. And on behalf of all the students I represent, I thank you all for being here. It's my second year at Clackamas Community College. I'm working towards a transfer degree so I can go to U of O and study business. And I think, as you guys know, the biggest obstacle to students is the high cost of tuition. I obviously know this from firsthand experience. In my role as president of our student government, I serve on the Oregon Community College Student Association. And so all throughout the state, all of the student leaders get together and discuss the issues that are facing students. So I know firsthand within my own college, as well as throughout the state, how students are being affected by increasing tuition and all the other issues that we're facing. In my own circle of friends, from this past fall, my friend Austin has dropped out to work. My friend Jeff has waited to start on his bachelor's because he's trying to pay for his housing. And my friend Andrew dropped out to work because he didn't want to have his parents help him pay for his own tuition. Last week, before spring break, I withdrew the last couple $100 from my bank account. But thankfully, student government helps me with my tuition. So, personally, most people face the same situation. Choosing between rent and life and everything, and taking an extra class or taking any classes, this is a problem, I would say. My own girlfriend is the first person in her family, including her grandparents, to attend college. I watch her as she balances her checkbook balance and taking an extra class. I see that firsthand. Community colleges, as we know, obviously are supposed to provide access and opportunity, yet students are facing more and more obstacles, like increasing tuition. So I applaud your efforts on the shared responsibility model, but I know how expensive it is for tuition. We have the capital construction that we're talking about, and as we mentioned, the Harmony campus, this is what we need. The classes are overflowing in our nursing departments and our allied health field, and this is something that we need. I talk to students every day, and thank you, and I hope you support 529 and community colleges.
Thank you very much. All right, now let's get Mr. Fogg up, Mr. Strecker, Ms. David, and Mr. Lee. And on deck, we've got Patty Jarrett, Tom Kennedy, Mary Nelson, and Jim Barlin. Start right in, young lady.
Hello. My name is Bethany Adamson, and I'm a student at Clackamas Community College. Tonight I was asked to read a written testimony on behalf of one of Clackamas Community College's business partners,
Phil Fogg Jr., President, Marcus Companies, and Clackamas Healthcare Blue Ribbon Committee Member. Mr. Chairman and distinguished members of the committee, I am pleased today to have the opportunity to support and champion Oregon's community colleges, providing accessible, affordable post-secondary education and workforce training opportunities to Oregon students is essential to the business climate of this state. As an Oregon business owner and member of the Clackamas Blue Ribbon Healthcare Committee, I believe community colleges are critical economic development partners, ensuring students of all ages and socioeconomic levels have equal opportunities for education, skill training, and career pathways. I am also here to reinforce the importance of the good work that Clackamas Community College is doing around workforce preparedness. From the viewpoint of the long-term care industry, an industry that is growing exponentially each year as our population grows and ages, I can tell you with certainty that community colleges are the only affordable and logical answer to addressing our industry's collective workforce needs. Clackamas Community College's Nursing and Allied Health Initiative is an excellent business model and best practice on how industry, local government, and higher education should and can work together. I ask you to support this important initiative. I ask you to maintain the capital funding request established by the community college president and the recommended priority. We must continue to invest in both our society and our economy. Keeping Oregon Community College budget complete is a great step in that direction and a true investment in the state's future. I thank you, the members of the commission, for listening to me today.
Thank you.
Senator Schrader, Representative Nolan, and members of the committee, strong courts build strong communities. I am here as a local Clackamas County attorney because I'm extremely concerned about the co-chair's proposed budget for the Oregon Judicial Department. The co-chair's budget is $24 million less than what is needed to restore the Judicial Department levels to those that were in place before the budget crisis of 01 and 03. We need adequate funding to all parts of the public safety and Judicial Department in order to efficiently process the caseload. You cannot add more police officers without giving the courts the means to process those cases. As a civil litigator, I am concerned that if we do not take measures now, our system will crumble. The time to invest is now. We're about to lose the ability to manage our caseloads due to outdated computer systems, our court facilities throughout the state are an issue, and the need for quality staff to address these issues is crucial. This includes the need to recruit and retain a highly qualified judiciary. Strong courts build strong communities. The time to invest in the third branch of government is now. We need to see the budget return to what the governor proposed at a minimum. With just a few seconds remaining, I think it's important to note that as I was waiting to get up here to speak tonight, I look around the room and most of our Clackamas County judiciary is here in attendance. Strong courts build strong communities. Thank you very much.
Oh, I need your name, Kristen.
Kristen David.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Robert, and I'm here to speak in support of Clackamas Community College. 4 years ago, I was laid off from my job in the computer industry. I was lucky enough to get retraining money from the state to go back to college and get retrained for a new career. As time went on, I gradually became successful at Clackamas Community College, earning A's and B's every term and also being on the honor roll three different times with straight A's. Clackamas Community College has helped me greatly, giving me financial aid every 3 years that I've been there, as well as a scholarship this last year. As an older college student, I'm on an age time clock. I don't have much time left to be successful. And there's people here tonight in the audience that are my age also. They don't have much time also. You've got to find a way to help keep the money flowing to Clackamas Community College. Now, your graphs and charts that you had here tonight, they were great. But emergencies happen. And sometimes you have to borrow money from some of these funding programs that you've got. I'm asking you not to borrow or take any money away from Clackamas Community College. They have growing pains, great growing pains. They are breaking out everywhere. They need the money for the new buildings and to refurbish and remodel older buildings and to keep their campuses going. I am glad to pay my fair share of taxes. so that you can continue funding your programs. But how can I pay my fair share of taxes when I'm earning a minimum wage job? If that money is not going to Clackamas Community College, if you cut it back, I may have to leave. And so will many other students. And we'll have to go out there in the job markets and get these minimum wage jobs because we don't have the college degrees that we need to get the higher paying jobs to pay more taxes. And so I want to tell you tonight, please find a way to keep that money flowing, to keep the college open, and keep it going so that people like me can gradually become successful. Because I had to start over when I got laid off. And as I say, I don't have much time left. I'm going for a double degree at Clackamas College, and so far I'm on my way to getting it. Thank you.
Yeah. Co-chairs, I have a three-minute speech. I've tried to edit to get down to two for you.
Good job.
My name is John Lee, Jr., and I'm the vice president of TimberCon and a resident of Clackamas County. This evening, I'm speaking on behalf of TimberCon. TimberCon is a fiber-optic manufacturing company headquartered in Lake Oswego. We specialize in the design, development, and production of premium optical communication products for the military, medical, telecommunications, networking, and data storage industries. Since our inception in 1997, TimberCon has become one of the fastest-growing technology companies in the Pacific Northwest, fueling a greater than 400% increase in personnel. At our present growth rate, we expect to once again double in size in the next 3 years. To support this growth rate, we need quality engineers and technically trained staff. TimberCon employs engineers and technicians that design and manufacture products for both domestic and international markets. Most of our competitors utilize resources in Asia for a large portion of the products they produce. TimberCon has and will continue to make a concerted effort to keep our manufacturing here in Oregon. To accomplish this, we need highly educated engineers who are both creative and flexible in their thinking. The increasing demand for engineers is making this difficult. Despite the approximately 40% increase in engineering graduates from Oregon universities over the last nine years, the prior years produced zero growth in engineering, leaving our state in a deficit position. We have a long way to go before we have enough homegrown engineers to fill all the technical positions that Oregon's many industries need to compete and allow us to keep jobs in Oregon. Like many industries, new fiber optic products cannot be realized without involvement of quality engineers and a technical staff.
Get you to wrap up if I can.
Sorry. A year ago, ETEC asked for $34 million. The governor had $17 million. You have cut that below the $17 million rate or recommended. I urge you to keep the ETEC program funded at a $17 million level.
Thank you very much, John. All right, let's get the next group up. Ms. Jarrett, Mr. Kennedy, Ms. Nelson, and Mr. Barlin, I believe. And then we'll have on deck Rosemary Teeter, Cindy Crooks, Lonnie Baker, and Edward Trumpke. Go ahead.
Good evening. Co-chairs, members of the committee, thank you for joining us this evening, and thank you for allowing us this opportunity to testify in support of the $1 million increase for CASA programs statewide currently included in the governor's and co-chairs' budgets for the next biennium. My name is Tom Kennedy, and I'm here speaking as president of the board of directors for CASA of Clackamas County. And I'm here to speak on behalf of the 120 or more CASA volunteers and board members, many of whom are here this evening, and I would ask them to stand up now.
Keep talking while they stand, please.
I will.
Hi, guys.
We have all seen how necessary and how effective CASAs are in changing and saving the lives of hundreds of children here and throughout the state of Oregon. But we need your support. Today, we can serve less than half of the children in need in Clackamas County. and yet the number continues to increase at a rate of over 10% a year in Clackamas County. Each year we work to raise more money to be able to recruit and train and serve more causes, but the rate of need is outstripping our ability to do so, and that is why we very much encourage your support of this increase in funding. It's a good investment for the state, and here's why. Throughout the state, for every $1 the state commits in funding, $4 are raised by boards like ours and delivered to support the programs directly. And through work done by CASAs throughout the state and a group of foundations, they have stepped up and offered to increase their funding to CASA programs by $2 million during the next foundation if the state meets its $1 million budget obligation, too. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Mary Nelson. I've been a CASA for 9 years, and I just want to say that CASAs make a difference in the lives of kids. Personally, I made a huge difference in the life of one little girl. She's now living with her family. And because I intervened and the judge agreed with me, she is now living with family and she's not placed in a stranger adoption. I still see that little girl today. CASAs help everybody keep the focus on kids. What's the best interest of kids? Many of our CASAs take more than one case because we really want to serve as many kids. We have a passion for kids. The judge has told us that we are her eyes and ears, that we help her make the best decisions possible for kids. She says that when she has a CASA on the case, she sleeps better at night, and she totally supports the CASA program. CASAs take the time to not only get acquainted with the kids, we talk to everybody who's involved in that child's life. Parents, foster parents, siblings, aunts, uncles, grandmas, teachers, anybody who might help us make the best decision for that child. And I totally would encourage you to support the program so that we can train more CASAs and be more involved in the kids' lives. Thank you.
Yep.
Hello, I'm James Berlin. I'm also a CASA, an advocate here in Clackamas County. I know firsthand the benefits of the CASA program for children. I also know firsthand what having an advocate can mean to a child, having someone in his or her corner looking out for those best interests. It's sad that we're only able to serve the number of children we serve now. It's important that we do what we can to reach as many children as possible in this state. We urge you to maintain the proposed funding level for CASA in the biennium. Thank you for your support as we work for our abused and neglected children.
Thank you. All right, let's get Ms. Teeter, Ms. Crooks, Ms. Baker, and Mr. Tromke up. Then we'll have Peter Watts, Noah Ernst, Hafiz Dari, and Michelle Newman on deck.
Chair Schrader, Chair Nolan, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you this evening. Lonnie Baker is not going to be able to join us this evening after all, so you can cross this name off the list. I'm here tonight as a GED teacher at Clackamas Community College. With me is one of my former students, Cindy Crooks. She's an example of what can happen for disadvantaged students if community colleges have the funding they need, which is the $529 million level recommended by the college presidents. When Cindy started in my GED class, she made friends with other students. They formed a group called the Cool Kids. In the literature of adult education theory, this is called a cohort or a learning community. Research shows that students in cohorts are more likely than others to succeed, meaning that they complete their educational plans. Cindy would like to tell you her story.
Hi, my name is Cindy Crooks, and I'm 52 years old, and I can proudly say that I am a student at Clackamas County Community College. That would not have been possible if it were not for the GED program at Harmony. It would not be possible without Rosemary Teeter. When I first started, I didn't think that I had a chance. I thought that my life at 52 was over, that I was not going to be able to find a job, that I was not going to have an education, and I always felt that there was something missing in my life until I finally realized with Rosemary's help, it was because I never got finished my getting my GED, getting my diploma. Well, now that I am going, I'm enrolled in the LCOP program, which is the Life Career Opportunities Program, and thank God that that program is there because I now have direction. I have a future. Without that GED program, I have to speak right now for the, they're not here, the past, the future, and the present students that need that class. If it were not for that class, I can truly say that I don't know where I would be going. I would still be going in that nowhere circle that I've been in. Now I have direction. It's a wonderful class. Not only do they teach you scholastically, but Rosemary has taught us how to have self-esteem and just the presence that we're worth it. And thank you. I all I can say is we need that program. Please do not cut that program. There are so many people that I have been in the class with, and I know how many more that need to come. So please do not cut that program.
Thank you.
Earlier in the presentation, you mentioned that you don't have any more money, and with all due respect, I need to say that you do. It's called the Tax Expenditures List. It's a book about this thick. Hasn't ever been sunsetted, needs to be. It's estimated to be worth $1 billion. It's also called the unconscionably low corporate income tax. Either of these would be enough. With both, you could actually really invest in higher education and building the workforce of Oregon. And until you use these resources, it doesn't really sound credible to say that you don't have the money. So we're asking you to please look at those sources for funding so that you can fund us at 529 and we can make workers for the state economy.
Very good.
Good evening, Senators and committee members. My name is Teresa Teeter. I live 2 blocks from here. Senator Gordley and quite a few of you know me from my political activism in Portland and the general area of the state community. My experience is I got a GED. I gave birth on April Fool's Day 33 years ago, so just had a birthday in the family. And a week later, I was kicked out of my high school because I was a first unwed mother in 1974 in Lincoln, Nebraska, in a high school. So I wound up getting a GED 2 years later, signed up for the Navy, and then found out I had to sign my daughter away during boot camp. So I tore up my papers and walked away and got a job driving a dump truck for 15 years. So I got an education in the construction industry from every angle you could possibly imagine. Ooh, and then some. So, oh God, men, excuse me. Okay, now that that's out of the way. Now, my concern is we have a United States former president coming to this state on April 17th. That's also my 51st birthday. We also have future presidents coming here on May 2nd, or hopefully Senator Edwards and some others. And for these folks to come back into our state and see the disrepairs and stand up on a podium and say that they want to be the president of this country, this county, this state, and everything's failing and everything's leaving Oregon and going back to Mexico, going overseas. And I used to drive a Freightliner truck, so I really pull with the Freightliner people today in front of the federal building. I felt for them big time. And my daughter got started off college at a community college in Lincoln, Nebraska, 2 years and switched over to State College, wound up with a 4.3 college grade average, you know, graduation average. She's now a new homeowner for 3 years, a brand spanking new home in Nebraska. It's conservative state, property taxes low. I'm suggesting you guys start lowering some taxes in this state and to offset other taxes, raise some things, lower others. I've said this over and over and over. The corporate tax, I'm a former member of Stanford Children in Oregon City that kind of went under, but I
really spoke to
the corporate tax needs to go up. PGE paying $10. And I pay $70 a month over here 2 blocks away. That's ridiculous. Thank you.
Very good.
chairs, and committee members, thank you very much for coming to listen to us tonight. I'm Ed Trompke. I'm here as a citizen and as a shareholder in Clackamas County's largest law firm, and I'm here because I want to ask you to support funding for a sufficient justice system in Oregon. The first and biggest item is judicial salaries. The figures show that Oregon pays its judges second lowest in the country, and I'm not going to mince words. That's just terrible. It's an abomination. The Chief Justice asked for a 30% pay raise for judges. They deserve it. You wouldn't want to go to the cheapest doctor in town. You wouldn't want the cheapest lawyer in town. And you certainly don't want the cheapest judge around. We need to pay our judges. On judicial facilities financing is the other issue. I'm personally involved in trying to figure out a way that Clackamas County could build a jail and maybe a courthouse to meet the population needs of the county. Senate Bill 733 and House Bill 2857 provide some new fees and some existing lottery money and provide a way to make seismic bonds that have never been used for courthouse renovations and jail renovations. In addition, if you'll give these bills a hearing, I will suggest some language that we came up with in Clackamas County to provide for a local matching portion so that you can require the counties to pay for a part of this out of revenues that would be exempt from Measure 50 and Measure 5 caps but still be property taxes. I'm asking that you do this for courthouses, jails, some mental health facilities associated, and other capital improvement facilities that are necessary. But you have to have a hearing, and I'm asking you to do that. Please do.
Thank you. Very good. All right, let's get Peter Watts, Mr. Ernst, Mr. Derry, and Ms. Newman up. And we'll have Michelle Markiston on deck, Doris Menard on deck, Norm Kohler on deck, and Eric Johnston on deck.
Thank you for your time this evening and giving us the opportunity to testify. My name is Peter Watts. I'm an attorney practicing here in Clackamas County. I'm also a lifelong Clackamas County resident and a graduate of Clackamas County's public schools. I think they did a great job and they continue to do good work. But I'm here tonight to speak about Senate Bill 733 and House Bill 2857. It's often said that Oregon's court facilities are crumbling, and that in the case of a catastrophic emergency such as an earthquake, many of them will be leveled. But after recently volunteering as a judge for Clackamas County High Schools in the high school mock trial competition, I don't think that it would necessarily take an earthquake to bring down the courthouse here in the local community. Many of the courthouses are just reaching the crisis point due to deferred maintenance and lack of funds. And I think that now's really the time to put together the study groups to look at what changes are necessary, what additional infrastructure is necessary, and what can be done to improve and replace the facilities. And so I would urge you to please support both House Bill 2857 and Senate Bill 733. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Michelle Newman, and I am also an attorney practicing in Clackamas County. I also want to speak about judicial salaries this evening. The amount that was identified by the Chief Justice as necessary for a fair and efficient court system is $360 million. The governor reduced that budget to $329, and it has been further reduced now to $304. So it's $56 million now beneath what the Chief Justice has determined is necessary. And probably one of the most significant effects of this is that the salaries for trial court judges are the lowest or the second lowest in the nation. And it, obviously that causes a problem when you're talking about recruiting the types of people that you would like to serve as judges, and also about retaining those types of people to stay there. In some cases, you know, obviously if people are moving from private practice, they're taking a significant pay cut to become a judge. Judges have not had a cost of living increase since 2002. The court system has identified the need for 62 new judges. The budget at the 304 level will not permit any additional new judges. And as we've heard, there is a significant backlog of cases. Cases are not moving through the court system efficiently. And the longer a case takes to go through, the more expensive it is, the more difficult it is, and the more difficult it is for the public to have speedy and convenient access to the judicial system. So I would just ask that you take an additional look at that aspect of the budget, and at least with respect to not letting Oregon be the state that pays its judges the lowest out of all of the states. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Noah Ernst, and thank you for coming to here to hear us testify. I'm also an attorney in Clackamas County and have appeared in courts throughout the state, and I'm also asking that you support Senate Bill 733 and House Bill 2587. The court system, or the court buildings throughout the state, as you know, are funded right now by the counties, and that has led to them suffering the same problems that all other programs that are funded by the counties, that if you go to counties in rural parts of the state or where funding is short already, that they have problems, as you know, funding education or other programs that you really can't cut, and that has led to them not making improvements or constructing new courthouses or other court facilities. And really that's led to, just a problem in that as the community or the court services are not adequately funded in different parts of the state, that different citizens of our state have different access to justice. And that's, the justice should be equal for all citizens. Whether you live in a poor county somewhere, you should come into a facility that's got the technology that you need, that it is up to date, that can process your case efficiently, that's staffed by competent people, and that is adequately funded. It's a statewide issue. It's not just a county issue. I'd also like to mention that one part of that clearly in the state is judicial salaries. We need to attract the best judges that we can get from all different practice areas. And if they can make massive amounts more money, frankly, in private practice, then there's little incentive, or it's a huge burden for them to take judicial positions. We have great judges in the state of Oregon. We need to continue to have great judges.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chairman, my name is Jeremy Vermilia. I'm sitting in for my partner, Hafez Dari, who had to go home with a sick child this evening. I'm also an attorney practicing in Clackamas County. Looking across the table, a lawyer joke comes to mind, but I won't repeat it here. I'm sure you've all thought
right
of one
ahead.
Already.
Do not feed into him.
I want to echo the support for full funding for the judiciary that's already been stated here this evening, and also the support for the courthouse facilities. Mr. Chairman, you mentioned sustainable funding in your presentation tonight, and quite frankly, the co-chair's budget for the judiciary is simply not sustainable. Thousands of Oregonians interact with this co-equal branch of government every single day, and arguably this is the face of Oregon's government to most people on a day-to-day basis. It's the place where democracy, where the rubber meets the road in the state of Oregon. But the lack of adequate funding threatens the service that the judiciary can provide to the citizens of this state. The judiciary's ability to function during the last several years of budget crisis is commendable, as is the commitment to public service by our judges. But the reality with respect to low salaries is that these salaries preclude many qualified candidates from having the opportunity or being able to serve their communities. When first, second, third year associates are earning more than our judges are earning, when 10-year attorneys in civil litigation are earning many, many, many thousands of dollars more than judges are, that's a significant sacrifice to ask people to make. We need to repair the funding gap. We need to support the governor's budget, support the goal of providing an average salary that is equal to the averages of the four surrounding states. And I urge you to seriously consider this, because providing the judicial service to our community requires it. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, let's get Ms. Markenston,
Ms. Menard, Ms. Kohler, and Mr. Johnston up. Next on deck will be Patty Phillip, Phyllis Newcomb, Randy Metzger, not sure on that one, and Carol Knudsen.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, my name is Doris Menard. I'm a member of NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and the mom of a son who has mental illness. Some of you may have been among those who at the end of the last legislative session stood on the floor of the House or Senate chambers and said that the passage of parity was the beginning of a new era for mental health in this state. Well, without a commitment from you, a stronger commitment from you, our legislators, that new era will begin, but never lead anywhere except to the state hospital. Services need to be available in the communities where people live, and this budget doesn't do it. Community care provides people a home instead of the streets. It keeps people in the community instead of the hospital. It keeps people healthy instead of decompensating. And it keeps people out of trouble instead of in the jails or the prisons where the lack of community care sends them. We would never tolerate a classroom of 57 students. We would say there wouldn't be any learning going on there at all. We wouldn't stand for it. We value our children and their education. Well, the care provider for my son has 57 clients on her caseload. That's outrageous. How can one person connect and help 57 people who range from those who are teetering on the edge of crisis to those who are vegetating in their beds? Nothing to do, no work, no future, no hope. Do we really think a new state-of-the-art hospital is going to wipe the conscience of this state clean? It will not. Not until we, you, fully address the needs of the mental health system in this state.
You'll have to wrap and up. I'm sorry, Ms. Murray.
The current budget won't do it.
Thank you.
Co-chairs Nolan, Schrader, committee members. My name is Norm Kohler. I'm the director of Community Access Services, one of some 100 companies across the state serving the what we call the comprehensive system of services, 24-hour services for people with developmental disabilities. And I'm sure most of you have talked to one or more of my colleagues. I have left, in the interest of time, a handout from the Oregon Rehabilitation Association that represents most of our members. The title across the top of the handout says, "Small Voices Deserve to Be Heard." And those small voices, of course, are voices of our clients, many of whom cannot speak for themselves. And we've talked to you about the crisis in funding that has kind of reduced us to a crisis in our industry. And in the interest of time, to give you a real-life example that I'm living with every day, about a half a mile from where we sit is one of our group homes we run in a four-county area, a home that was established in 1990 with five young people from Fairview who are medically fragile, who are doing the state's business. Three of those people are still there. Two have passed on. They've been replaced by community members with the same kind of medically fragile disability as the other folks in the home. At this moment, we have six openings in that home, three full-time and three part-time openings. We have had two full-time openings in that group home since October. Our workforce has been devastated. There's recognition in both the governor's budget and in the co-chair's budget of our plight, but it's a little bit too little and it's a little bit too late. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you.
Thank you, co-chairs Nolan and Schrader and members of the committee. My name is Michelle Markison Ratcliffe, and I am here tonight. I'm from Hubbard, Oregon, but I'm here with a group called Oregon Farmers Feeding Oregon Kids, and we are requesting your consideration of House Bill 3476 and 3307, which would create a farm-to-school program within Department of Education and a supporting role within Department of Agriculture, and it would allocate up to 7 cents per school meal to be stipulated to be used for Oregon agricultural products. And, And a secondary complementary bill is House Bill 3185, which is a school garden bill. It would start a program within the Department of Education and award mini grants to schools for gardens and other agricultural and food-based learning. Top five reasons why it's a good investment. Oregon is one of a handful of states that doesn't contribute additional funds to the school lunch or breakfast program other than the federally mandated match. Secondly, these bills make it possible for our state's agricultural community, not only farmers, but food processors, manufacturers, and distributors, to bring great Oregon products into schools. Currently, our federal regulations prohibit schools from stipulating a regional or local preference. Third, for many kids, school lunch is a primary source of food and nutrients all day, and these bills ensure Oregon's most vulnerable children have equal access to food. Fourth, we've heard it, but childhood obesity and related problems are escalating at alarming rates, and these bills prevent viable strategies to increasing kids' fruits and vegetable consumption, as well as their physical activity levels, and in the governor's report that was released yesterday, gardens was presented as a viable strategy to addressing obesity. And lastly, by decreasing the distance between producers and consumers, these programs also decrease our emissions of greenhouse gases and our reliance on oil. It's a win-win program. So thanks for your consideration.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Eric Johnston. I'm the executive director for a local Clackamas County nonprofit called Todos Juntos. Last year, we worked with over 320 youth countywide. We work closely with rural school districts, juvenile department, police departments, and other human service agencies that provide services for at-risk youth. There are many nonprofits doing wonderful work with at-risk youth and prevention efforts. Therefore, I am advocating for an increase in locally invested funds through the Commission on Children and Families for expanded services for high-risk youth. Thank you.
Thank you. Very good. All right, let's get Ms. Phillip, Ms. Newcomb, Randy up, and Ms. Knutson up. And on deck, we'll have Ed Smith, Gerald Skirl, Kenneth Etheridge, excuse me, and Mark Burnham. Right ahead, ladies.
I'm Phyllis Newcomb, a member of the Senior Companion Program of the Clackamas County. I'm here to address the board on behalf of the Senior Companions and the need of continuing this particular program. Looking at this distinguished board, I don't think very many of you are ready for our program yet, but your day will come, believe me. Watch. Our program, we serve the people of the community that are not necessarily homebound, but perhaps they are having a lack of family support. Maybe they can't drive, or they don't have the ability to go grocery shopping, or maybe they just need a friendly voice to come in and visit with them, play cards with them, whatever it is. As senior companions, this is the service that we provide. You like to save money. One of the things that we do is we do save you money. By calling on these people in their homes, we're able to keep them in their homes. And the Medicare says that it costs about $45,000 a year to put a person into a retirement home or assisted living. Three people, if we keep three people out of the retirement home, we have paid for our program. is very important and something that we like to keep going. It's a two-way street. We get a lot out of it, and we give a lot to it. So we have over 700 volunteers in our county, and of that, we have 37 of them that are our senior companions. So as they say, watch out, your day is coming, but you'd like to see us coming into your home.
My name is Patty Phillip, and I've been a senior companion with Clackamas County for 9.5 years. And I wouldn't have given up this opportunity to be with these people for anything. It's the most rewarding thing I've ever done. And 37 senior companions have kept 318 elderly and we have served 318 elderly and disabled adults. And we volunteered a total of 34,344 hours in 1905 and 1900, the fiscal year. And we drove over 180,000 miles to and from our clients and taking them to do their errands. And we're really proud of what we do. And the average age of the senior companion is 75 years. And our senior companions, are their ages go from 61 to 93. And I have had such wonderful people while I have been in this program. And I am also on the board for RSVP and SVP, the Retired Senior Volunteer Program and the Senior Volunteer Program. And we place volunteers 55 and over throughout the county. And 800 RSV volunteers are located in 200 community organizations that use volunteers. And RSV volunteers help with community issues and any challenge that we have. And we really need some help with our program, I can tell you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We're proud of you also.
Good evening, Co-Chairs Nolan and Crusader. Thank you. And for the committee, thank you very much for coming out in our community to ask what our concerns are. I'm Carol Knutz, and I'm the executive director of the Edwards Center, which is a private not-for-profit that serves over 300 people with developmental disabilities in the metropolitan area. I am a part of a group that is here to ask you to reconsider increasing the increase in budget that we need. We have asked for $60 million, and that's what is needed in order to stabilize our programs. We are one of several very grassroots-type organizations that began at the request of family members, parents of these people when they were children, because the schools of Oregon chose not to accept them as part of this community. So they got no education, no services of any kind. So organizations like ours develop services using community support of all kinds, and we've done that with very little support from the state, our organization, and myself individually for 33 years. We've reached the point where we just cannot maintain stable organizations without more support, and it has to happen. And we are here to ask you to consider that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, let's get Mr. Smith, Mr. Skirl, Mr. Etheridge, and Mr. Burnham up. And on deck would be Michael Egan. I've already heard from Laura Masterson. Jeff Lighty and Tara Williamson. I guess I did not. Please, glad you're here. Okay. Kenneth, that'd be fine. Go right ahead. Tick, tick, tick.
Hi there. Very happy to have you here with us today and giving us an opportunity to speak to you. My name is Jerry Scoville. I got to do better on my writing, I guess. I'm an old retired school administrator who backed K through 12 budgets until I retired, and then I got involved with my university, Portland State University, and have been very involved for the last about 10 years. I'm now the chair of the Advocacy Committee, and as you, I'm sure, are aware, we were all backing the governor's budget. And guess what? Higher ed budget took quite a hit. And so I'm here to tell you that I'm sorry about that. And I hope that before we get down to the final decisions about this budget, that higher ed will get a better shake than it's gotten right now. Portland State has some very serious maintenance things that have not gone well and need to be reworked on, like Lincoln High. You remember, that was a high school, which is now part of Portland State. It was probably almost condemned in 1950 and now needs some work. And our Science 2 building, that also needs some work. But I don't want to forget, we have faculty members that haven't gotten salary raises. We are in a competitive world with salaries, and it's time that our faculty members receive the money that they should get, and you can help them. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good evening, Senator Schrader and Representative Nolan and committee members. My name is Edward Smith. I'm here on behalf of the Funding Oregon Recovery Homes Outreach Policy Option Package 101-7. A small portion of Policy Option Package 101-7 of the governor's recommended budget proposes providing funding for three Oregon Recovery Homes outreach coordinators to travel throughout Oregon over a two-year period and open at least 14 recovery homes that would be accessible for TANF recipients recovering from addiction and rebuilding relationships with their children, families, and the community. This proposal also includes trainings, leadership development, mentoring, and recovery support services. In addition, these homes remain operational for approximately 10 years each, stretching the cost of establishing these homes to a mere $1.40 per day per bed, and providing this proven effective resource in both metropolitan and rural areas of the state an unparalleled value. The outreach coordinators also develop sustainable community volunteer efforts that support these homes and add a priceless commodity to the value of this package for years to come. This is a sound investment in both the communities and the lives of Oregonians throughout the state. It is a public health and safety issue that cannot be ignored. With 212 documented drug-related deaths in 2006 and the burdens of foster care and the methamphetamine epidemic on the rise and demanding attention, this small investment may be the most cost-effective, life-saving, and far-reaching proposal in the 2007 to 2009 governor's recommended budget. We respectfully request that the Ways and Means Committee reconsider this proposal and add it to the recommended budget. And there are many others here who support this.
Representatives, I'm Mark Burnham from American Medical Response. I'm also representing the Oregon State Ambulance Association. First of all, I just want to say I'm very impressed with your ability to sit there that long, because I've been standing walking it back. And just to remind you, as a medical professional, you need to get up and move every now and then. I'm here basically to bring your attention to the fact that many of our Oregonians' access to emergency medical services and the quality of emergency medical services. We've seen a sharp increase in the cost for highly trained EMS professionals, the equipment that we use, and things of that sort, especially pharmaceuticals and fuel. One of the things that I want to remind you of, despite all these, we remain committed to our communities to serve and provide, and we're actually one of the accesses to people who have no insurance. We're the first people they see. And regardless if they can pay or not, we provide care on a constant basis. In the state, Medicaid and Medicare reimbursement is well below half of what our actual costs are, and typically our patient mix is 60 to 70% Medicaid. So we want to also bring the point that 10% of those people are uninsured. The state, as you know, quit funding a motor vehicle accident fund for uninsured motorists, and those days of our ability to cost shift are gone. So we want to ask for supportive inclusion of $467,000 into the DMAT budget directed towards enhancement of emergency ambulance transportation. This, coupled with the federal reimbursement match money, would bring us up to a whopping 52% of our cost. So that's what we're here to do. And I was on the Area Agency Aging Committee in Clackamas County for a long time, and two of the people were unable to get on the list. And I just want to remind you, they were here because they wanted to show support for our elders in this area. And just want to remind you that, just keep in your mind that as I look at this committee today, I don't see a bunch of men like we would have seen 50 years ago. I see people of race and color and creed, and they're here today representing us because those people behind me with gray hair said, not in my nation, not in my country. I want the best to represent me. So keep that in your mind for us tonight.
Good evening, Ways and Means. Welcome. My name is Kinnette Etheridge, and I think in my eagerness to come before you, I may have signed up twice, so I really only want to speak once. I'm here to talk about Healthy Start. This is a program, as you know, mandated by the state of Oregon in 1993. It provides parental risk screening and community resources for first-time parents, and most importantly, it provides intensive help to at-risk families. I'd like to tell you why I'm so interested in this program. I am the director of nursing at the birthplace at Willamette Falls Hospital. We see 80 to 100 babies born there every month. I've worked at St. Vincent and I've worked at Silverton, and very much concerned about our young families. My nursing colleagues and I can tell you that we have a unique window into the lives in the beginning of these young families. We saw the overburdened grandparents. We saw the advent of the meth amphetamine. We saw homeless families, and that was long before they showed up in headlines. I have seen in my 30 years is that our young families are increasingly isolated and fragile. Getting help for them is increasingly complex, and it often is too crisis-based. That is why over the past years I have volunteered to be on the advisory board of Healthy Start in two different counties. And I am very concerned that we recover funding that was lost in the last two legislative sessions. This is a program that works. We work because it chooses the right parents. 96% of them report are at risk. It works because children in Healthy Start families are better off. They are immunized against diseases 93% compared to 70% of similar families. I would like to present to you probably the biggest telling story is message from our families.
I'm not sure you really have a lot of time. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you, though.
From our families.
Very good. Very good. Very poignant. Thank you. All right, Michael Egan, Ms. Masterson, I'm sorry, Mr. Lighty, Ms. Williamson. And then on deck we'll have Michael Beerley, Jennifer Schatz, Jana Soli, and John Elizal. I'm sorry about that.
I have the required 20 copies right here as my entrance fee.
Yeah.
And I, too, am glad that you're all here, amazed that you're all here. And I'm very thankful for that. My name is Michael Egan. I'm here tonight on behalf of Elders in Action, the commission, which in Multnomah County, by statute, advises all local branches of government regarding the needs of senior citizens throughout Multnomah County. I know particularly Senator Gordley and Senator Westland and Senator Morris and perhaps Senator Schrader are well aware of OPI because I heard them tote the praises on the 30th of September when they were talking about revenue reform. OPI, as you know, started in 1975 and is highly effective and a financial efficient program which allows seniors in need of care services to remain in their own homes at a fraction of the cost. Conservatively said, over the 32 years of his existence, OPI has saved the state thousands of dollars. I'm sure we can move that to at least several million. And the difficult thing about this, as you know, the governor's budget has brought us up to 16 million, and in your difficult situation, you've cut it back. I just want to leave you with the understanding that you pay us now or you pay us later. You're paying us $200 a month on the average for OPI in-home care, and you'll get the privilege of paying $1,400 if we're forced out of our home. And I'll say in closing that I'm also a consumer, and that if it weren't for my unpaid family caregiver and the respite help she receives, I'd be in a heap of hurt, and you'd be out a hell of a lot of money. Thank you very much.
Yep, go ahead. Senator Schrader, Representative Nolan, and members of the committee, my name is Jeff Leedy. I'm the president of the Oregon State Police Officers Association. And as I've been sitting back here, I couldn't help but think, man, I wish I had something good to say to all of you. And so when I see their yellow card from Representative Nolan, I'm going to say something good. As of yesterday, 100 people have died on our state highways since you've been in session. I testified at another hearing in March 7th, and the number was 75. The numbers that are nowhere in the state right now do we have 24-hour, 7-day-a-week coverage with our Oregon State Police and our state highways. The numbers that your budget is proposing, while we greatly appreciate the increased positions that you're giving us, will not attain 24-hour coverage. By not attaining that goal this session, you're putting that off 4 years. It'll take 4 years to attain 24-hour coverage because we've got to wait for the next session, hire these people, train them, and put them on the road. I want you to strongly consider reworking those numbers to where it gets to 139, and at a bare minimum, we can put a trooper out on the highways 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Now for the good news.
Get that card up quick.
I'm proud to be an Oregon State Trooper. I've been a state trooper for 20 years. I give you this promise and the promise to the people sitting behind me and in this state. The people wearing the uniform and doffing that smoky bear hat every day will continue to go out and serve you proudly and risk their lives to make yours safer. Thank you.
Thank you. Can you hold up?
Wow, this is a little intimidating. My name is Tara Williams, and I work for Albertina Care Centers, and we support adults with developmental disabilities. So we already had some pamphlets apparently handed out. I have more with my business card for questions. But we are here because we would like support for Oregon rehabilitation funding. We're requesting $60 million in general funds to increase rates to provide basic compensation and stabilize our programs. Which I'm sure you've heard from a lot of people, but we're also, I have Jan here, and she's going to give you her spin on it.
Hello.
Hello.
I am scared.
So are we.
Let me tell you why. I live in a supported living situation. I am currently looking for a new personal assistant or caregiver, as most people would understand. People are not running to take the job. If I don't hire a caregiver soon, the agency which provides me the services that makes it possible to have a qualified caregiver will be forced to drop me from their program. I have no idea what my life would look like if that should happen. And I have woken up to nightmares of little glimpses of how badly my life could be turned around. I wish that just once you could spend a week in my life when I don't have a caregiver. I am sure you would get the most emotional roller coaster ride of your life. Please, we need more money to help keep caregivers on the job and not looking for jobs that pay better. Thank you for listening to me.
Thank you. Good job. Thank you very much. Let's get Mr. Beerley up here. That might be the same, different spelling of the... No, different man. Okay. Mr. Schatz, John Asoli, and John Elise. Well, whatever. I'm sorry about that. I'm sorry. I get my name messed up all the time, too. Yeah. Well, let's get Wanda Richhoff up. And Eric Cannon, too, please. Start right up, please. Beautiful young ladies.
Good evening and welcome to Oregon City. I'm excited to be here. I've heard from people that have I've been able to volunteer for Healthy Start. I've worked with Clackamas Community College in programs for my school. So here with a lot of impact, the state... very important for us to fund all of these programs. My name is Jennifer Schatz. I'm a fourth grade teacher at Springwater Environmental Sciences School. We are Oregon City's first charter school in a K-8 program. We're currently K-4. And the kids heard my speech today. We practiced reading fluency, and so they really helped me out. They were great revisers. I'm here today to support Oregon Museum of Science and Industry for what they give to Springwater School. When OMSI educators asked me to participate in the new Expedition Northwest program this year, I was impressed with their hands-on science curriculum and the theme of water resources. Our classes traveled to OMSI to hear expert scientists report on the status of salmon in the Columbia River and to learn how wetlands absorb water and prevent floods. My class of third and fourth graders conducted water quality tests on the Willamette River on the submarine dock at OMSI, learning how pH, temperature, secchi depth, and dissolved oxygen data are indicators of water quality. We have put this knowledge to work here in Oregon City by continuing to ask, is this water healthy for salmon? We've done water quality tests on the Clear Creek and Clackamas Rivers this term. Our students are the future of our state. They are the next scientists, doctors, engineers, and community leaders. We need to give them the opportunity to see science and math as accessible and filled with promise. OMSI makes this happen in Oregon City. Please support OMSI in science education. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Chandra Wofford, not Jana Soli. You already heard from her earlier.
Sorry.
I am a 10-year 4-H member with the Clackamas County 4-H program. I'm also a senior at Sandy High School. And I'm here tonight just to kind of explain to you my experiences in 4-H, what it has to offer, and why you should be concerned about it. First of all, I have been enrolled in, over the last 10 years, in sewing, cooking, photography, public speaking, forestry, sheep, and leadership. That's the end. There could be more. But I have had the chance, especially last year, to travel to Denver, Colorado for the National Livestock Judging Contest at the National Western Livestock Exposition, as well as travel to Washington, D.C. for the National Young Leaders Conference, and just recently in November, the National 4-H Congress in Atlanta, Georgia. In 1 year, I traveled to 3 different states, and none of that would have been possible without the 4-H program. However, there is something new. I am going to be an advocate of the 4-H program long after I am gone. This is my last year. Next year, I will be a 4-H leader. This year, I just entered the Miss Mount Hood Scholarship Program. This is a local preliminary competition to the Miss America program. My goal is to make it to the national competition and advocate for 4-H as much as I possibly can. I have also done numerous leadership experiences on the county and state level. I am the president of the Clackamas County 4-H Ambassador Team, as well as president and reporter of other 4-H clubs. And to tell you the truth, I cannot believe that I am sitting here in front of all of you today talking to you about what 4-H has to offer. I am one of 1,400 4-H members in the Clackamas County 4-H program. Next year, I will enroll as a freshman at Central Oregon Community College and become a 4-H leader for the Deschutes County 4-H program and bring most of our leadership experiences from this county to their county and expand it as much as possible.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very much. Good job.
My name is Wanda Eichhoff, and I'm a 35-year resident of Clackamas County. And just so you know, I was a 4-H'er in Montana. I'm here tonight to advocate for the over $5 million that the Department of Justice is asking for the Division of Child Support because of the federal funding cuts. And this is the first time ever that we've had to ask for general fund money. I know that you've currently included it, but as many people sit here tonight asking you for other things, I'm stating that it really makes a difference to families if we don't have that money. Currently, in every office in the state, there are vacant child support case manager positions waiting to be determined whether those positions can be filled based on what the budget is. All those empty positions have hundreds of cases that are being worked by case managers who have full caseloads. When those cases aren't worked, dollars don't get to families. Sometimes those dollars don't get to families. That means that the non-custodial parent doesn't get to visit with his children. That means everybody suffers. The other important piece that I have to say to you is that healthcare really matters, and we hear it every day in the people that we talk to. For the custodial parent who doesn't have insurance and only just not qualifies for the Oregon Health Plan because $50 or $100 a month over income, or because of the new federal regulations that say that when health care is available through an employer, it must be provided no matter what the cost is to the working parent. That parent may not have insurance because it's costing $100 a month, but we're mandated to make the employer enroll him and take up to 50% of his net income to pay for his insurance and for his children. I urge you to find money by raising the corporate tax minimum, to find money to put children back on the Oregon Health Plan and find a way to make insurance less expensive in this state. Families suffer. I've been a single parent without insurance. I've been employed after my children were 18 and had health insurance. Please do something about that, too.
Thank you.
Good evening. Welcome to the hustings. You've got a long week, I guess, from the looking of your schedule, but this is good that you're doing it, and we appreciate it. My name's John Elizalde. I'm a member of the board at the Oregon Food Bank. I'm a member of the Oregon Faith Roundtable Against Hunger, and I'm speaking tonight as the manager of the Northeast Emergency Food Program. So I'm changing the agenda a little bit and talking about hunger. We give groceries to people in crisis. 1,400 people a month come to our food program trying to get groceries, because, among other things, they can't afford housing, so they use their discretionary dollars to pay for housing because there is food from food banks like ours. They can't afford health care, but they use their discretionary dollars, whatever they may be, to try to pay for health care, prescriptions, et cetera. And there is a food bank they can go to get groceries. So there is a direct relationship between Senate Bills 38 and 5517, that address the housing program that's in the co-chair's budget. That's a step in the right direction. Where I work in Northeast Portland, Senator Carter's district, Representative Shields' district, there's a housing crisis. Now, the folks who own houses don't think there's a housing crisis because they're sitting on huge investments that are escalating, even still. Extremely expensive housing. But if you're poor, expensive housing is not good. And that's what's going on with poor people in my part of the state and in other parts of the state. So I'm asking you to fund the housing program. The array of funding alternatives that the co-chairs have included is reasonable. Contributions from across the state are behind that. And I'm also asking you to provide health care for kids. 37% of the kids we serve are kids. Give emergency food to our kids. That's bad. That's wrong. And you're in a place where you can make a difference, and I appreciate your time tonight and your efforts on our behalf. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I'm going to make an announcement. It's getting on to 9 o'clock. There is unfortunately no way we'll get to everyone on the list here. We're up to page 7. We'll probably some of my colleagues also have come a long ways, and if they have to leave at 9 o'clock, I don't think that's a problem. I'm willing to stay, I think, with some of my other colleagues, maybe until about 9:30. So we're probably only going to get to maybe page 8 and a little bit of page 9. So I apologize for those of you that are on pages 10, 11, 12, and 13. Just no way we're going to get there, and I apologize profusely. I'd be glad to stick around after the meeting and chat with you if you want to talk individually. Let's get Eric Cannon, Sherry Harbert, Emma Lou Lundgren, and Paula Q-Tub up, please. Start right up.
Of, by, and for the people. And I want to thank you for bringing us democracy here tonight in action and for all of us to participate in. It's a wonderful thing. Thank you. I am Eric Cannon. I'm a resident of Forest Grove in Washington County. I slipped across the border this afternoon, and I want to thank the citizens of Clackamas County for allowing me to sit at this table. We don't have the privilege of hosting you in Washington County, thus I've crossed the line tonight. I am the chair of the Interfaith Committee on Homelessness. We have raised $20,000, which we contributed to the family shelters in Washington County. And we have learned a lot about homelessness and that issue. What we've learned is that the face of homelessness, the faces of homelessness, are children and families. They're not just single men. We've learned that the average age of a homeless person calling on the shelters in Washington County is 12. We've learned that we have four shelters in Washington County that help the homeless. The county has a population of just under 500,000 people. We have 110 beds available to people. And that means that of 100 people who knock on the door of the county's shelters, that 12 get service. The other 88 leave for the street. We're here to encourage you to support Measure 38, which creates the $100 million fund that Senator Schrader alluded to, and also House Bill 2735, which is brings some sanity to the mobile home park issue. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good evening. Thank you for being here. My name is Sherry Harbert, and I'm from Tigard, Oregon, and also working to put a face on homelessness. I'm also a writer, so I've been talking to the families who end up in the streets, in the parks, if they're lucky in the shelters, having to face mothers who have lost a job because their car broke down and then lost their apartment because they can't have a job. one of the things that we need to do is consider them in all of this. There is a good part with affordable housing. I've been on a tour with the Community Housing Fund, who are leverage monies to put together for affordable apartments in the area close to jobs. They are using, one of the places was Greenberg Oaks and Tiger, where they're using innovative green technology for energy efficiency. They have an after-school program. They have a little garden for community. It's close to Washington Square where the people can get jobs, and that's why it's so critical. When I look around Tiger and see these expensive homes, beautiful homes, Bridgeport Village being put up, and yet the poor families are getting pushed further and further away, and a lot of times they can't make it to those jobs. So when you see clerks, you see the waitresses, you see the gas station attendants, those people need to be close to those things. That's all they have. Anyways, I urge you to support the $100 million funding for affordable housing. Thank you very much.
How you doing? My name is Kenneth Scott Clowley, and I'm here with the Oregon Recovery Homes of Oregon. Today I'm a success, and you guys may up there wonder why or how. It's because of the people like Ed Smith, Mike Morgester, Wayne Klein, Robin Breckenridge, who go to bat for people and give them hope and serenity in the community that recovery can happen. And in these five pages right here, this little packet right here, is proof of why Oregon Recovery Homes work. You know, I'm a success, and, you know, I'm sitting up here in front of a committee of all you people, and in a million years would I never be up here, but today I am a success, and I can stand up here and fight for what works. You know, our communities are safe today from me, okay, but there's a lot of people out there who need to be saved, and with the help of you people and Recovery Homes of Oregon, Oxford House of Oregon, it can be done. And right here, if you guys would just look through these little pieces of paper right here, this is cut and dry why it works. You know, I'm totally for this, and if there's any way I can help you people help us, I'm willing to do that. No matter what it takes, all costs, all stakes, it can be done. You know, our job is to save lives and protect the community, and that's what we're doing today.
Thank you. Thanks. Get Wayne Hammersley, Ed Wilson, John Munzer, and Mary Dickinson, please.
Co-chairs Nolan and Schrader and committee members. My name is Wayne Hammersley. I'm a board member of the Northwest Autism Foundation. We founded the Northwest Autism Foundation 10 years ago with a simple mission of providing information and education to those who care for the autistic in Oregon and Southwest Washington. Since our beginnings, we've had the privilege of working with many autistic families. The more we learned about the autism spectrum disorders, the more we came to appreciate the complexities families face in raising an autistic child. We maintain an active parent education program, but the scope of our services within the area of autism has expanded, and now we're involved in a collaborative diagnosis, treatment, and educational effort also on a national level as well as a state level. Our experience has taught us much. As you know, or perhaps don't know, 1 in 120 children born each year in Oregon have autism spectrum disorder. That's the highest rate in the nation. Left untreated, Oregon potentially faces a $20 billion physical crisis based on 2006's autistic school-aged children alone. In 2006, 6,374 school-aged children in Oregon suffered from ASD, up 90% from 2003. It can cost between $2 and $3.2 million to care for a person with autism over his lifetime versus the $200,000 approximately for intensive care if early diagnosis in the 2 to 3 year age to age six. Over 50% of autistic children treated properly, early diagnosed, can be invisible going into the first grade. Autism is treatable.
Wrap it up, Wayne, if you could, sir.
Oops, excuse me.
Sorry.
Okay. Didn't want to.
All right. Pass out your testimony if you'd like us to.
Yeah, we can do that.
I'm going to get that to you. Thank
okay,
you.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Good evening, Chair Schrader and Chair Nolan and the rest of the committee. My name is Ed Wilson. I'm Fire Chief for the City of Lake Oswego. I'm also a board member for the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association, Western Fire Chief Association, and I'm on the Governor's Fire Service Policy Council. And I want to first thank you for scheduling this forum and then also express my sincere appreciation for all the hard work that's gone into the development of your recommended budget. But I'm here tonight to support the Governor's recommended budget as it pertains to the funding of the Office of State Fire Marshal, the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, and the State Police Arson Unit. Without these very important agencies, well, the reason I support those is these agencies are, they meet the needs of the Oregon Fire Service, they're very efficient, and they produce results in communities.
Sorry. Do it again. Give them a little extra time.
Without the services provided by these agencies, many of our fire districts, fire departments throughout the state will not be able to fund fire code inspections, fire investigations, investigation of suspicious or hostile fires, fire prevention programs. In some communities are already weak, but they're enhanced by these agencies. And then, of course, emergency response. There's approximately 8,000 volunteer firefighters providing protection to the community in this state, and there are approximately 3,000 career firefighters. Both career and volunteer departments throughout the state depend heavily on these agencies for training and certification. The Oregon Fire Chiefs Association, which I can speak for, believes that the fire insurance premium tax, which is used to fund all three of those agencies, if they're not funded out of the general fund, should continue to fund only the items that they were intended to be used for. The governor declared conflagration should continue to be paid for out of the general funds as outlined in ORS 476.510-610. Reimbursement of fire department expenses incurred under the Conflagration Act, is an expense of the state of Oregon and the state's general fund. If these agencies were allowed to keep I think you get the gist of it.
Sure.
Thank you very much.
First of all, my apologies for the phone. Good evening, all. I don't envy you your job. I know that you're in the position where you have to figure out, well, we've only got so much money. How do we divide it such that everything works like it's supposed to? Well, I can tell you, or at least part of the answer. We need a $60 million increase to funds for developmental disability comprehensive services. In the long run, that will cost the state less money. I'll explain why we're hemorrhaging money now and how you can fix that by this increase. The reason we're hemorrhaging money now is one reason only. We can't afford to keep staff. We pay $9 an hour. Walmart pays $10. Our staff can add. We have close to, in some programs, over 100% turnover. You can't keep stability in a program. You can't keep safety in a program like that. And that's costing all kinds of money. First of all, in overtime, the few staff we've got have to work 60, 70, 80 hours a week. That's hemorrhaging money. People who are working 80-hour weeks make mistakes, costly mistakes. Medication errors get made. People go to the hospital. That costs lots of money. There's not enough staff to keep people occupied and happy, so they freak out. They start hitting people. There's not enough staff to safely restrain them. We call the police. The hospitals can get involved. The jails can get involved. That's all costing lots of money. People are making errors like not seeing the signs and symptoms of illness or dehydration because, you know, they've only been on the job 2 weeks. All the old staff who know what the symptoms look like are gone. People go to the hospital. This is costing lots and lots of money. An ounce of prevention is going to cost a lot of money. It's going to cost about $60 million, in fact. But it's going to save you a whole lot of cure. $60 million more, please.
And your name for the record, sir?
Oh, John Munzer.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all.
You bet. Thank you. Let's get Marion Henderson, Javier Torres, Kim Biggs, and Tony Crawford, please.
Good
Senator Schrader, Representative Nolan, and members of the Joint Committee of Ways and Means, thank you for your time tonight. My name is Javier Torres. I'm advocating for the students of Mount Hood Community College tonight. I'm here to testify on behalf of the community college budget for all 17 community colleges statewide. I'm basically here today to state that students right now are paying more and we're getting less. That's the bottom line. The 20% that was allocated in your co-budget is just not enough. The minimum to even progress Oregon out of a hole that we've been digging ourselves in for the past three or four bienniums is at least the governor's recommended budget. I fully support, and I know that my other 16 constituents from around the state need the full fund of $529 million. On top of that, tuitions are skyrocketing, as we all know. When courses get cut, student fees come in. That's something out of our pocket that's not in our financial aid packets that we have to pay on top of that. I'm also a full-time worker. I work 40 hours a week as a custodian at Clackamas High School. I'm also an Aspire mentor. I'm also the Director of State and Federal Affairs for Student Government at Community College. I'm also an OCCSA board member. I'm also an OSA board member. And I'm also a member of Phi Theta Kappa. So I just urge you and my fellow 24,000 constituents that go all the way across the board from Mount Hood Community College year-round and my other 16 constituents from around the state to please fully support community colleges to the fullest because we need to make Oregon stronger. Thank you very much.
Very good.
Good evening, Senator Schrader, Representative Nolan, and members of the committee. My name is Tony Crawford. I live in Canby, where I've been a social studies teacher for the past 27 years. Thank you for the opportunity to address the committee this evening. Just yesterday, I had the pleasure of addressing the Education Subcommittee. Highlights of my testimony at that time included comments on class size comparisons and out-of-date resource materials that I have in my own classroom. In fact, I even brought props, but I left them out in the car this evening. The comment that I offered yesterday regarding class size comparison was 27 years ago, my classes, when I started, ranged between 12 and 22 students. Today, I have between 30 and 35 students in each of my class periods. But, you know, we used to think 25 students would be a huge number. 25 students now today would be a breath of fresh air. Yesterday, I even shared some of the out-of-date resource materials with the subcommittee. I brought with me a globe. This is a globe from my own classroom, and it features the Soviet Union, East Germany, and other countries that no longer exist. I want you to know we still use that globe for other purposes, but my students would tell you that it's pretty weak for current events. The paperback atlas that I brought, it's all worn out. We keep it together with staples and tape. On the upside, it's well used. But on the downside, we haven't had the funds to replace those paperback atlases. We look forward to doing that this next fall. And then the third resource that I brought with me were the World Almanacs. Now, on the upside, I have enough, one for each student in my class, but the most recent edition I have is the 2003 edition. So we're looking forward to replacing those as well. Now, I didn't even mention the out-of-date textbooks that occupy space on the shelf in my classroom, and I will spare you the joke about the pull-down map and the Congo line, which the subcommittee got to hear yesterday. Now, for the record, I wish to be clear that my comments are not to suggest any irresponsibility with the Canby School District. We're simply, just like many districts in Oregon, trying to do the best that we can with the resources that we have. And I have included in my written testimony a report of budget cuts that we've experienced over the past 5 years, totaling $5.6 million, excuse me. Now, I appreciate your opportunity, the opportunity to address the committee, and thank you for sticking around this late. And the pool back there, by the way, is addressing who's going to leave first.
Thank you. I'm Marland Henderson. Thanks for listening to me. For the last 14 years, I have been part of Washington County's Behavioral Health Council and have been given a pretty good study in the issues of mental health within Washington County. 2 years ago, when I realized that that there was more behind mental health than just, you know, lack of funding, I realized that there was a issue that was fast coming about, when our prison systems became an ad hoc mental hospital. 2 years ago, I joined the Coffee Creek Correctional Facility Advisory Board, and what I hear them say to me every meeting is that go back to your community and find those community services that we need. This is, of course, the same cry I hear throughout the mental health community. Without that community services, this just doesn't work. We're looking at walking into a new state mental hospital, and surely this is years away, but now's the time to start building that, build those community services that makes it work. That's my message. I'm also belong to Oregon State NAMI and out there working with those people too, and we want you to join us. Thanks.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Kim Biggs, and I'm a disabled Vietnam veteran. And in 1969, I was wounded, and they patched me up real well and for 5 months, and then they discharged me, and off I went. And for the next 18 years, they didn't fix the mental problems. And we all know about the Veterans Administration and how understaffed they are. And these young men and women coming back now, they're just not going to get the help from the VA they need. These are Oregon kids, and they need help from Oregon people, healthcare professionals. There has to be a way to get these young men and women in to see the healthcare professionals to help them get their lives back on track after all they've given up. Thank you.
Thank you, Kim. Thank you. Appreciate your service, too. Thank you very much. We're going to have four more, and then we're going to call it good, I'm afraid, folks. Nancy Yule, Tom Rassell, Sally, Steve Leichenberger, and Cheryl Snow. Start right up, please.
Okay. Hi, my name is Amy Favre. I'm with the Neighborhood Partnership Fund, which is a nonprofit based in Portland that works to support the creation of affordable housing and economic opportunities for low-income Oregonians. I'm actually Nancy Yule on your list. She had to leave. She is the executive director of the Clackamas Community Land Trust. And the Clackamas Community Land Trust is a member of the Housing Alliance, as is the Neighborhood Partnership Fund. And Nancy and I both wanted to thank you for recognizing the need for a significant investment in affordable housing. Every day in Oregon, hardworking families and our neighbors on fixed income struggle to afford the cost of housing as it becomes increasingly out of reach. Housing gives people an opportunity to build better lives. And with your continuing support for the $100 million for affordable housing, including the passage of Senate Bill 38, we will move towards ensuring that all Oregonians have a safe and decent place to call home. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good evening. Thank you for your patience and your endurance. My name is Cheryl Snow. I live in rural Camby, and I am involved in arts and culture as a patron, as an advocate, and I am here as the executive director of the Clackamas County Arts Alliance. I would like to ask you tonight to support the Oregon Arts Commission and the Creative Oregon Initiative. Statewide, the arts industry accounts for over $250 million in direct spending every single year from audience members, from visitors, and the more than 20,000 people in this state who make their living as artists and who support their local businesses and their local schools with their taxes. In Clackamas County, cultural tourism is a key economic driver. The foundation of that industry are our many dozens of festivals, events, attractions, and the hundreds of creative people who live and work here. The Arts Alliance provides training, skill building, resources to support all of that work, and we in turn are funded by revenues provided by the Oregon Arts Commission and the Cultural Trust. Because the Cultural Trust exists, 38 county organizations, attractions, and projects received grant support since 2005. Whenever asked, Clackamas County citizens say that they value access to arts and culture opportunities as a very high priority. In fact, donations to the trust from Clackamas County citizens increased by 31% last year. Throughout Clackamas County, towns and cities are discovering arts and culture as tools to revitalize downtowns and to welcome diverse new residents. It is no surprise to me that in Canby, the Livability Coalition is building a green space art park. Estacada's Main Street includes 5 arts businesses. They were lauded for that this morning in the Oregonian. Here in Oregon City, citizens are intending to restore the iconic municipal elevator through public art projects. Please support the governor's budget proposal for a Creative Oregon initiative, because that investment will be matched many times over in tangible and practical results. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Co-Chair. I'm sorry, Co-Chair Schrader and Co-Chair Nolan and members. I'm Tamara Sale with Mid-Valley Behavioral Care Network in Salem. I'm speaking in support of restoring funding for early assessment and support teams to the Human Services section of the co-chair's budget. These funds are included in the governor's budget, policy option package 104-45, and the State Hospital Community Services Work Group report. Although schizophrenia and other psychotic conditions are far more common than type 1 diabetes, and although these conditions typically start in the teens and young adulthood, it's amazingly difficult to get help. Today, across Oregon, we wait for young people who are hallucinating, delusional, and confused to drop out of school, lose everything, and become an imminent threat to themselves or others, and then we lock them up against their will. With the help of private foundations, Mid-Valley Behavioral Care Network, which includes Lynn, Marion, Polk, Tillamook, and Yamhill counties, have changed this reality. We actively educate the community. We reach out to young people who are showing signs of psychosis to build trust and to provide them with the most current evidence-based treatment. We provide intensive family support and work with schools and employers to help the young person stay on track. Our graduates are entering professions such as healthcare, computer technology, and academics. An investment of $4.3 million will make early psychosis intervention available statewide.
Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Steve Lichtenberger, and I'm also here to support the early assessment and training. 10 years ago, my oldest son graduated with honors from Sunset High School. 5 years ago, he was diagnosed with schizophrenia. Through the EAST program, he is now a graduate and a customer of the EAST program. While I was sitting here listening to all the testimony, I kind of relived the last 5 years, and I wouldn't wish that emotional roller coaster on anybody. So please, you guys can do it. Give us some money. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I'd like to thank everyone for coming here tonight. I'd like to thank my constituents for showing up in force, overwhelming this very illustrious body here before you, and I appreciate my colleagues taking the time, spending a very long evening in our district to hear your concerns, and thank you very much.